Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Okay, everybody, the Hawker Archives Master Library is up and running again. For those of you who have gotten a hold of the Hawker's Archive Master Library, go ahead and either give me a call or forward me your donation ticket back to tahawker53@hotmail.com, and we'll get that thing to you. Also, for those of you who have not accessed this powerful library, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. Click on the donation page up top and you'll see a complete listing of the packages and stuff that we offer. And of course, Talk Archive Master Library is now officially listed and we're back up and running. Okay? Peace. During a natural disaster and economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Monael Bay, for more details. Area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Monael Bay, 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard. Removing the burdens of debt gives us a freedom unmatched. Peace of mind is something that's very vital to our health. Not only do we want to concentrate on growing our own food and contributing to nutrition, but we also want to free our mind from the burden of stress. Stress is a killer. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Look at the items we have there. Before making any selections, you can give me a call. If you have problems with your student loan, if you got a situation with the Internal Revenue Service, mortgage, or whatever it is, go to newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Monael Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remove the burden of debt.
Welcome, Moors, to Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Monael Bay. And this evening, we are dealing with part three, and this is our final episode. And the only reason it's our final episode on this is because I've come to the conclusion that there's just no way possible for me to get everything said about this particular subject that we're dealing with. Part three, the professionals, contracts, equity, law, mortgage, loans, and justice. Today we'll be dealing with the following questions. Who stole your credit? Get rid of property taxes. the birth certificate, and beyond? What is the comprehensive annual financial report? How do we use our credit? What is the financial solution? What is a black budget? These are just a few of the main questions that will be dealt with this evening, and we're going to get right down in this thing immediately because I don't want to waste any time because we got so much, and I'm hoping I can get it all in. And we're going to answer this thing from every conceivable angle. And the bottom line, in my opinion, is just simply collapse the bond and go ahead and take your resources, what have you, that's there, and stop messing around with this thing. And we got this stuff right there on my wall over on Facebook. Just send me a free request to Amana Bay on Facebook, AmanaBey, on Facebook. Go to my wall and you'll see this. Now, we're going to be taking this particular information and put it in the archives. We can't do that until next week. We're going to spend a whole lot of time because we got a ton of information, new information to put in. Not that you need it, because everything you need is already there. However, we're going to be adding this information, which takes you step by step of how to do just that, collapsing that bond and having access to it. The work will be minimal to get that done. People have been contacting me about it. How do you do that? You know, I had the documents a long time ago, but been so busy doing so many other things and helping so many different people across the country and other small countries that I just hadn't time to do that. So we're going to do that. But in the meantime, I'd like you to walk along with me and do it along with me. But we're going to do just that, get that done, get it over with and finish. That'll be the end of that, and I'm done. Now, we're going to take up where we left off from last night with Miss Mary Croft, the author of the book, How I Clobbered Every Bureaucratic Cash Confiscatory Agency Known to Man. Miss Mary Croft gives you a breakdown of how we are supposed to be living in America, all the nuts and bolts, the background, everything, the whole ball of wax. For the first four episodes, we dealt with her. So now we're finna finish up with the remaining episodes. Then we're going to go directly into this birth bond. We're also going to into these property taxes, get rid of that. And then we're going to go into that birth certificate. Okay, hold y'all hat.
To ABC Electric, and we pay in cash. What we've actually done is give ABC more debt instead of paying off the debt that they created, like the bill that we get.
Yes.
We've actually doubled the debt, but because they perceive, it's not what the corporation wants is double the debt. The corporation doesn't want to double debt, but keep in mind, corporations can't show a profit. So where does that cash go? It goes to the corporate board members, because keep in mind, a corporation is a fiction.
Yes.
And so it doesn't have any feelings either way. But it doesn't set off the debt. When we pay our electric bill, it actually makes the situation worse.
Hmm.
So what happens is the board members, who like cash just as much as we do, they take the cash and create double the debt. Well, what does double the debt do? It creates what's called the national debt. And that's the old, Americans are in so much debt.
Yes.
Well, no, we're not. The corporations are in debt.
Hmm.
Because that's how they want it, because they want us to continue to fork over our cash to them. Because they can use cash, the people, not the corporation.
Sure.
It's kind of a switch. Like, corporations need credit, not debt.
Exactly.
Run them want debt, not credit.
And it's a kind of, the system at this point, or the way the system or the structure is being used, is that it's going to self-implode or pop like a bubble sometime here, it feels like, because in a way then this means that they have to gain more and more and more and more debt basically in order to pay the previous debt, but this is going to again bring in more debt, so it's going to pop, right? The bubble's going to pop.
Well, not if we call their bluff. which is what I think is going to happen. I don't know if you're familiar with George Green.
Yes, I've heard of him, yes.
Have you? Yeah. Now, he says watch out for September 30th because that's the U.S. fiscal year. By that, I mean the fiscal year of the corporation called the United States government. Keep in mind, it's not a government. It's a corporation called that. So what he's saying is watch out. And I say, well, we got a little under 60 days to call their bluff and say there is no national debt. All you're saying is that that every time we've given you cash, of course, we can't pay the interest because the interest doesn't exist, right? If they only create so much cash and they want interest on it, well, how can you pay something that isn't there, right?
Yes.
And if just in case you don't grasp that, that would be the same as my borrowing your car with a full tank of gas and bringing you back more car than I borrowed. It's an impossibility.
Right.
So when banks lend you money and want interest back, well, where's the interest?
Yes.
unless they create it, and they're not going to do that without charging you interest, right?
Right.
So it's just this laughable circumstance. And I contend that if we can get enough people, especially those who think they're about to lose their houses with foreclosure, if we can get through to these people and say, you don't owe the bank owes you. They've been using your credit for however many years, and they've never paid any tax on it. So they owe us. So then, you know, we sick the IRS on them and say, go in and get my credit for me. Because the promissory note that most people use to get the loan for the house was the payment for the house right up front, right in the first place. Why? Because you put your signature onto a piece of paper. And remember, the signature is worth, well, billions. It's unlimited credit. So they took that promissory note and they converted it. And they've been selling it and using it. So the bank's gotten paid like, oh, who knows how many times. And they also want us to pay every month?
Yes.
So people have been going back in and getting not only the value of the note, but also the monthly payments. Imagine having everything you've ever put into your house come back to you in the form of a check from the tax agent. It's fabulous. Anyway, of course, yeah, right. So, you know, all you're looking for is an updated, well, we won't go there. But anyway, so will the system implode? Well, we could say yes, and that's good news, or we could say no, it'll simply start to operate the way it's supposed to. But you know, just like a cornered dog, they may not go down nicely.
Right,
right. They may fight and to the bitter end, even though they know they're losing, and it may get a little bit uncomfortable, and there may be some casualties. But I am sticking to an intention that is, once enough of us catch on, they simply won't have an option and they'll have to start behaving themselves. And people who are in the positions of enforcing, for example, the police or the banker who says, you overdrafted your account, so we're going to charge you $30 on top of that, they're going to catch on that they've been duped and that they are in fact guilty of wronging their brothers. And if they think that the banks aren't going to do the same things to them as they've done to us, they need to think again. So, you know, cops who are locking people up for ridiculous reasons, they got to get that what goes around comes around, and they're going to get locked up when their usefulness has been fulfilled. Pardon me. Yeah, usefulness has been fulfilled.
Right.
They're simply going to say, thanks, Buster, now you're up. People have to back out of unethical behavior, and the whole issue is about ethics.
Yes, yes, I totally agree, and that's a very, positive note as well in regards to that there's so much doom and gloom, so to speak, right now in regards to the financial system, that everything is going to collapse and so forth, but it's more how we utilize the system and use it, because the structure, as you say, kind of is there in place. We just have to operate it in the correct way in order to make it work, basically. But Mary, let's do like this. Let's take a short break right here and continue talking more about this in our member section. I want to definitely go into a little bit more about kind of the idea of a natural person versus an artificial person. We haven't really kind of talked about the idea of the birth certificates and how actually a person is turned into a corporation at birth and so forth. There's many things we can talk about also in regards to your name when it is in capital letters, what that implies and so forth. There's much more coming up here. But before we finish this segment off, tell us a little bit about your website and how people can find a copy of the book that we've been mainly talking about here today, Mary.
Okay, I don't have a website.
You don't?
No, the Natural Person website is not mine.
Uh-huh, really?
It's just a friend who posted my book on his website. And although I love him like crazy, I have to tell you, I have a real problem with the concept of natural person, because the word person itself means legal fiction or corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So an artificial person is an artificial corporation.
Right.
Natural person is a natural corporation or legal fiction.
Mm.
So the distinction is not between men and women and corporations. The distinction is the uppercase name is what is commonly known as a natural person, but it still doesn't have anything to do with men and women. An artificial corporation is something like Sears.
Right.
Or ABC Electric. That's an artificial corporation, meaning that there is no life attached to it. It's complete fiction. A natural person is still a corporation, a legal fiction, but it's connected to a real man or woman. But the uppercase name we've kind of let go as far as significance goes, because, when we raised so much hell about it, oh, who knows how long ago, we started noticing that they try and bluff it. For example, the names on birth certificates now, I think, are showing up as capitalized. Or, for example, a court order might have a normal first and second name and the last name in uppercase. In other words, they're trying to do everything to get around the fact that they're not, nor can they lawfully, write to a real man or woman. They cannot address us. They have no right. They don't mean us anyway. They mean the legal fiction, because we're the authorized representative and we can set off any debts or alleged crimes that the legal fiction may have performed. But that's the only way we're connected with it, is that we get to say, oh, I see you've charged this corporation, of which I am the authorized representative, so, okay, how much is it you need? I'll put my signature to it. I'll have the Treasury set off your, balance your books for you. So, but when they say they want a legal fiction in court, well, what's that all about? Legal fiction's already in court. They've got the name right there. So the natural person really is just the legal fiction that exists along with an authorized representative. But keep in mind that all artificial persons or corporations also have authorized representatives, and they're attorneys and CEOs and presidents and things like that. They're the authorized, you know, probably like Sam Smith might be the CEO of Sears, and he can sign for Sears because he's the authorized representative. Well, we're the same. The only distinction is that Sears is an artificial corporation, and the other name, of which I'm the authorized representative, happens to be a natural person. But it's all still legal fiction. It doesn't have anything to do with men or women. So I get a little crazy when people say, oh, you're a natural person.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not. I'm not a legal fiction.
So a definition would be a real human being, right? That's a good word.
I can't say human being either.
No. Not that either.
No. We use man and woman.
Man and woman, okay. Well, let's go with that then. But
and if you want to really generic that, I just say man. Like I just say, well, man to, if I'm talking to somebody, I say, well, man to man, because we are of mankind. That's
right, mankind. Yes, indeed. Okay, point being here, there is a website anyway where you can get Mary's book that we have been talking about, and that the website there is natural-person.ca. And I guess that the other website that I gave out at the beginning might not be either your either then. The spiritualeconomicsnow.net, is that not yours either?
Yeah, no, that's my blog.
That's your blog. Okay. Okay, yeah. Very good.
Rather than write another book, which I realized, you know, like the first one would sort of be outdated the minute it hit the internet, I started writing articles. So yes, spiritualeconomicsnow.net is my blog, and what I do is I post articles, and you can just go back and back and back, and there's archives and stuff, and so you can read sort of the latest and greatest of what's going on. And my most recent one, I think, really spells it out pretty well, because I really touch on this OID process and the two forms of accounting, because the public accounting has absolutely nothing to do with private accounting. In other words, private meaning between you and me. The public is completely separate. And in fact, if indeed they intend to charge us, what they're doing is they're obstructing the bankruptcy, and they're in violation of public policy, and that is unlawful. And we can go after them for that.
Mary, let's take a short break right here then. And again, the website is spiritualeconomicsnow.net, and I will have that linked up on Red Eyes. But stay with us, Mary, and we'll continue after this break, okay?
Okey-doke.
We'll continue with Mary Croft in our members section. We are going to talk more about birth certificates and the procedure of registration you go through when you're born, and the fact that a corporation is set up as an artificial person to represent you. We'll talk more about Admiralty Law, or Law of the Sea, and the esoteric connection to the words like a bank currency and ship and their legal writing. Talk more about the banksters behind this, their mentality, and where to go to learn more and keep up to speed with Mary's findings. So head on over to redicecreations.com. Click on subscribe, sign up, tune in, and take advantage of our member section. More radio and video material is available for you there. Thanks to producer Fredrik Palmgren, and thank you for tuning in. This is Henrik. More Mary Croft after this break. Welcome, Red Eyes members. We are talking with Mary Croft about money, banking, law, and commerce, and much more for that matter. A very interesting conversation. And what I'd like to do right now is to get into a little bit more and just to clarify a few things about what actually happens when you are born, so to speak. We're going to get into this about birth certificates and what actually happens that a corporation, so to speak, is being set up alongside you as a man. So Mary, if you will, in this day and age, before you, in the first segment you were talking about after a certain date, people were obliged to go and register their child, basically. So what happens today when that takes place, at least if we are talking to it in the context of the US and Canada? They go and they register the child to their government, so to speak. What happens at that point?
Yeah, it's really, it is quite a recent thing. And that is prior to the 30s. Nobody registered births. That was not necessary. And because apparently, I don't know, but apparently it's because it was registered in the family Bible. I mean, you wrote down the child's name and when he was born, and that was sort of done, right? But what happened due to the bankruptcy, they said, we are going to have to capture the future labor and productivity of the people, because we no longer have the minerals, the gold, the silver. We have nothing left to pay the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the interest on the loan that they lent us. Well, of course, the foolishness was that they ever got entangled with the World Bank in the first place, but which is unfortunate, because we were tricked into it. But that's the way it is. So then they said, well, what else can we give them? We've given them all the gold and silver, and by the way, there is no gold in Fort Knox, that same cliche. So then they said, the only thing we have is the productivity and the future labor of the people of the country. They will create the interest that we can pay the IMF, otherwise we're in deep trouble. So that's why, 50 years ago, well, not 50, okay, let's say 80.
Yes.
People just weren't, there weren't any crimes, because there was no win for anybody. I'm not saying there was zero crimes, I'm saying there weren't anywhere near the number there are now, because there was no win for there to be crimes. Consequently, you know, I mean, I think it was Thomas Zaz who says the reason there are sick people is because there's doctors, not the other way around. In other words, they needed us to break the law so they could fine us in order to get the funds to pay off the interest on the national debt. So they started creating these absolutely absurd statutes. I mean, I don't have to tell you. There's over 60 million statutes, at least on this continent, where one false move and you've broken the law. Allegedly, apparently, that's what they say.
Yeah.
You know, what about seatbelt laws? You weren't wearing a seatbelt. Well, who did that hurt? So that's not it. It's if we catch you, we get to fine you. And if we fine you, then we have that much more to pay the World Bank in interest. Well, as you know, the interest is just now completely vertical. So what happened was they said, what's the best way to do this? And that is tax them on every turn, every move they make. Applying for university, they have to put a signature. They have to an application. You used to be able to think back to when you and I were kids. Well, I don't know how young you are. But anyway, they used to be able to go into a bank, say, you have bank accounts to offer, and they say, yep, and they'd hand you a signature card. And that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's your account number, your passbook, and thanks for the signature card so that when you write a check, we know what your signature is. And that was it. And now you have to apply for an account?
Yes.
It's insanity. And you have to agree to the innumerable terms and conditions of this unilateral contract. And the and then they have your signature. And I don't mean on a signature card. They have your signature to this contract. So guess what? They start out by robbing you. Where that never used to happen. Not when I was a kid. So once again, I say you cannot go through a day without violating at least one of these statutes. Why? Because they want to fine you. They have to fine you because they're sunk. They know it's over if they can't pay the interest on the national debt.
Yes, to have a traffic tickets, kind of minor things on the surface, at least this brings in the money in order to keep this system of debt going. Isn't that right?
That's right. But as I explained before, the money really doesn't keep the system afloat.
Yes.
What it does is it pays people like judges and municipalities and the people who are actually confiscating the cash. Because remember, when you pay any alleged debt with a debt, you've doubled the debt. So it isn't about offsetting corporate debt. If they truly and honestly wanted their books balanced, they would say, would you please sign this for me? Then I can take it over here. Then we can simply go into our computers and offset the debt that we just created by charging you. We can offset the debt. But offset of debt isn't what they want. They want a slave labor force, and they want the people in high places to have our cash because they use cash the same way we do.
Yes.
Get what we want. So the best way to create a corporation that could be charged for all these misdemeanors and violations of statutes was to have women register their babies' names as a corporation.
Hmm.
Now, it just so happens that one of my boys does not have a birth certificate. Now, if I had that was 17 years ago nearly.
Mm-hmm.
If I had it to do again, I would have gotten him a birth certificate. And I think even in my book, I said we should not have gotten our kids' birth certificates. But yes, we should, because we want them to have this unlimited credit. See, we saw it as with a birth certificate, they're charging us. That's not really true. They're charging the name, and they're holding us as surety, in other
mm-hmm.
words, the guy who has to pay the debt.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we know how to do that, see, now I wish I had a birth certificate.
Then it could be turned into a benefit, right?
Exactly. It's now a benefit to us. They can charge all they want, and it's no threat to us now. But back then, we were saying, holy cow, a birth certificate only gets you into trouble because they keep charging it, and we have to pay it. What if he didn't even have a birth certificate? There's no way they could charge him.
Hmm.
Well, that's true, too. But, as you say, he's missing out on all the real fun.
I guess it also depends on what you want to do, so to speak. If you want to kind of disconnect from the system altogether, then that would be a good option. But in this case, in case your child or yourself want to maintain within the structure that is there, the governmental society structure or system, then it's a potentially good way to still operate within that in order to benefit from what it can offer us, right?
Precisely, and that's it. We do have an option. We can go sit under a tree in nature and drink the creek water and operate like that, or we can continue the way we've always lived. But yes, we need that almost like a credit card birth certificate in order to operate in commerce. And probably most of us are not willing to give up our lifestyle. Some of us are, of course. I do know people that we're headed for the hills.
Yes.
We're done, right?
Yes, yes.
And they do. They check out of the system. But it might be a little bit difficult for them to leave the country if they choose. And, you know, it's even though the United Nations has their Declaration of Human Rights says any man is free to leave the country and return to his own country. So not really, but it would take a little bit of time, essentially saying, okay, you want me to play the game? Drop the documents. This is your problem, not mine.
Right.
So it's possible, but let's face it, most of us want to, shall we say, be free within the system that's actually restricted us. But in other words, we now know there is a way to operate. So I have to come up with a way to get my son handled here.
Do you think that there are people within the system that actually have learned this? Let's say the people within, high up in these big corporations or in insurance, what have you, that actually have discovered this or through some other means have actually learned to utilize the system in this way. Do you think that's the case here?
Absolutely no question. They have what's called treasury cards. But keep in mind, this is the very top of the pyramid. And I will say this, a friend of mine was having something, and in attendance was a former vice president of one of the major five banks here in the provinces. And they were talking about this, and the VP, the retired VP, sat there with a stunned look on his face and said, you know, I knew there was something, I just couldn't figure it out. So even the vice presidents are not in on this.
Right.
It's top CEOs, presidents, and literally the global elite. And yes, they have access to their treasury account that looks pretty much just like a credit card, and they can walk into Sears and put down this card and get their lawnmower, as if they do their own shopping, eh? But anyway,
right.
Put down this card, and that card accesses their treasury account, which we have not been able to do yet, but we can circuitously. In other words, when I say we haven't been able to do it, I mean we haven't gotten the card. But it's there, we know, so far where we've arrived is that we simply hand out the correct forms, and then, you know, it's just a question of time before we get reimbursed.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but again, I just want to clarify the forms and the specific that you're talking about right now, that is only something that is applying to people within North America, is that correct?
No. What I'm saying is these are tax forms. Now, what the people in Europe can do, if they're so inclined, is to do a little digging and find out which of their tax forms correspond with the same IRS tax forms. And when you grasp the purpose of each of them, then it's probably not so hard to find. However, I will say this, that my friend in England is having a heck of a time trying to match the British tax forms with the IRS forms.
Uh-huh.
Even we here in Canada, I don't mean I'm in Canada, but I mean
sure.
the Canada forms.
Sure.
We're having a little trouble with that, too. We're missing a couple. So what my friend in England said is, it might just behoove everybody, now imagine how bogged down the IRS is going to get, it might behoove all of us to get what's called employment identification numbers and international tax identification numbers, which come from the IRS. They're international, which means then you can dabble with the IRS. Now, this friend I just mentioned to you, I talked to her this morning, I said, you know, the joke is they're going to have to hire more IRS agents in order to deal with us. And I said, but they're sure not going to tell us. And she said, oh, yes, they do tell us. It's on the news that they've had to hire more IRS agents. And I said, well, I'm surprised they would tell us. And they said, well, they said that they've hired more because they're cracking down on us. And I said, no, that's not true. They're hiring more because we are now demanding reimbursement. We're demanding checks. And they had to hire people in order to get this handled.
Right.
This is good news. And, of course, she saw it as bad news, right?
That's pretty interesting.
So things are looking up. We've got more IRS agents. Now, I know most people are going to hear that as, oh, no, now they're really going to come after us. No, no, that's not true. Huh. They've got more agents to do our work that we're demanding of them.
Absolutely fascinating. Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let's talk about that again, or backtrack yet a little bit again and talk about that, that they're setting up a corporation, correct, alongside when you were registering your child. Is that correct?
Right. So they set up a corporation, which, of course, they can charge now, right? Because what happened was the mom turned over legal title. Keep in mind, there's equitable title and legal title. So they turned over legal title to the child, to the state, or in this case, the province, or whatever you call wherever it is you registered birth. So now they have legal title to that entity. And what they try and do is convince us that that entity is a man. And it isn't.
Right.
A piece of paper couldn't be a man. A name can't be a man. A picture can't be a man, right?
Yes.
Only men can be men and women can be women. But so inevitably, you know, you hand the cop your driver's license and they say, is this you? Well, what a moronic question. Of course it's not I. It's a picture. You're looking at me here.
It's a representation of yourself, isn't it?
There you go, yeah. And they try and trick us into saying that we are a name. For example, you go into court and they call the name, you know, Sam Smith, and this guy stands up and the judge says, what's your name? And he says, Sam Smith. Bingo, you just contracted in to being the one that got charged, when in fact it wasn't the man who got charged, it was the name that got charged. Because the name is the name of a corporation. Now, if Sam Smith is smart, he'll simply say, I'm here about that matter. Well, who are you? Well, I'm the authorized representative of the name of the corporation you just called.
Hmm.
In other words, make the distinction, because what they do right from the get-go is they try and make us believe that we are that name. And when that name gets charged, whether it's a traffic ticket or whatever, that we're it. We're not it. Hmm. But we can choose to be surety. Now, for a long time, we were avoiding suretyship, simply saying, I went to court one time, I said, but that's not, that name is not I. Well, they locked me up for that, so I didn't do that again. But what I should have said, of course, is, I'm the authorized representative, you know, what's the charge? Here, I'll set it off for you. What's the problem? What's it going to take? But, so they get very upset when you try and deny suretyship. Well, now what we do is we take on suretyship. So instead of saying, nope, that's not me, we now say, sure, here, I'll sign for it. What do you want? Go ahead, tell me. How much? I'll sign for it. Right here. I'm not frightened of suretyship anymore. Where we used to be, we were saying, well, if we admit to being the name, then they'll come after us. Well, no, we make it clear that we're not the name and that we are willing to handle the charges. But first show me the charges, and they tend never to do that. But that's another thing. So getting back to the corporation, they created the corporation for the purpose of charging. Simple as that. In order for them to create debt on the books so that we will pay their debt. But it's their debt, not ours. Same as credit card. I get crazy when people say, oh, I've got so much credit card debt. You know, I said, well, no, you don't. The credit card company has the debt.
Hmm.
Now, you want to set it off for them, or are you going to slave labor for them?
Yes. I mean, it's incredible, the system that has been set up here and how it's being used. And, I even want to go back to the idea of why the fact that this is something called, you know, we can call it Admiralty Commercial Law, or some have referred to it actually as the law of the water. And even in regards to how we the names and the etymology that we use, you just mentioned suretyship, for instance. We're talking about these kind of, it's like it's the law of the water, right? That the commercial law has to do with waters and commerce in regards to how ships were trading in way back when, many hundreds of years ago. Is there any connection at all there, do you think?
Oh, you're absolutely accurate. And my favorite example, of course, is the word birth.
Yes.
Ships are birthed.
Yes.
Babies are born. But they call it birth. I mean, if that's not right from the get-go, eh? Talk about trying to make us or put us into Admiralty Maritime Law. You're right. I mean, and it never ends. I mean, the number of words that, well, you just picked on surety ship, yeah. It's endless. The number, of course, person is my favorite, but and includes. The word includes. Okay, for example, you know, it took me years. You'd think I would have done this, but only about in the past year I looked up the word Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think I would have done this sooner, but anyway, I looked up the word Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And what it said was, first of all, it said, for greater understanding. Well, doesn't that immediately make you think, well where's the other understanding? Like, did you write something before this? So what do you mean by for greater understanding? Greater than what? Anyway, so you keep reading, and it says, Canada includes the inland waters and the territorial seas. Well, it just so happens that the word includes means. It doesn't mean, for example, if you and I have a party and we say, well, let's have a party and let's include the neighbors, that means you and I have some friends here and also the neighbors, right?
Mm-hmm.
What they mean when they say, let's have a party and that includes the neighbors, it means only the neighbors.
Hmm.
So when they say Canada includes the inland waters and the territorial seas, it means Canada means only water.
Really?
There is no land called Canada.
Huh.
It's only water. So when people say, were you born in Canada? I say, do I look as if I have fins and gills? No.
Right.
Born on the land.
Yes. And where do you, Mary, where do you go to check up? Do you use like a law dictionary? What do you use to check this up?
I'm trying to think, where did I look that up? I think I looked up the word Canada in the Interpretations Act, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Yeah, I think that might have been it. And the word includes, but you got to remember, there truly is a language called legalese. I mean, it truly does exist.
But what did you call it? Say it again.
It's called legalese.
Uh-huh.
Like, it really does exist. And it's the language of lawyers, of the bar.
Yes, yes.
And they change the meanings, as you can see. I think includes is my favorite. But but the other one is person. And person means corporation or legal fiction. It hasn't anything to do with man, woman.
Hmm.
So when somebody says, well, you're a nice person, you know, I mean, when I hear that, well, actually, no, I'm not. I'm a woman. Maybe a nice woman. I may not be. But, so, you know, this is just sort of for the purposes of training. You know,
yes, yes.
People up on their language, you know. But that's fun, and once you get over that, that's enough. But but the words are absolutely incredible. For example, you'll always hear it in court. Or, you know, well, do you understand? Well, no, I don't understand, which means I refuse to stand under your jurisdiction. You haven't proven any authority over me, so no, I do not stand under it. I don't understand. And yet, they're pretending that what it means is, do you know what the hell I'm talking about?
Right, right.
It's not what they're saying, but it's what it sounds like. So they'll trip you up at any turn. And so it does help to know the meanings of a lot of these words, most of which will absolutely stun you when you go, what? Is that what they mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. It's downright deception.
But I mean,
you're having fun with it.
Does this draw us back to the those who began this system? I mean, again, I'm thinking back to the old kind of merchants and those who were the initial kind of traders between nations, and that they were setting up a kind of a artificial system to operate outside the normal law of the land, so to speak, and that when they were doing this, they could also consequently supplant this later onto the law of the land, and now everyone is actually operating within this law of water. So do you think there is a connection? If you go back a little bit, I mean, we could talk about the Templars, what have you. We can talk about the originators of the banking system itself, right? Isn't there a big connection there?
Yeah, I think you're right, and I confess I'm not completely up to speed on the history, but you're absolutely accurate. about the fact that it all did start on the high seas, and it had to do with ports and the seas and piracy. And in other words, England allowed certain pirates to steal certain the goods from certain ships, just not English ships. It was, it's barbaric,
yes.
You know, and how this all came about. And yes, it all had to do with trading, and I'm sure the East India Company, and all this comes into play. Well, then, in order to control the people on the land, they just carried it over.
Yes.
It was, and they used the same words, birthing, and so essentially, and even we call our bodies vessels.
Yes.
They're vessels. Like, you know what I mean? It's so absurd.
And you know, it's like, we're talking about this idea that, I mean, just look at the word bank, for instance, right? That this is, Jordan Maxwell and another guy called Jason Whitney did a lecture about this a while back, where I listened to this, very interesting, and they were talking even about the fact that, there's even, in regards to currency or the currency or the flow of money has to do with water. And even the fact that you're being charged, that this has to do with electricity and things of this nature. Have you heard about that?
Oh, yes, yes. It's very accurate. And charge and closing the circuit. And that's why we say we close the accounts. And, as you say, the bank of the river, it's all about water. And then, of course, I guess you could say, well, we're 80% water or 75% water. So maybe it applies to us in some...
Yes.
Surreptitious man.
In some esoteric way, they've found a way to kind of supplant this, and I mean, in a way, it's as you say, it's logical in that sense. Then, but again, it's not applicable to what we actually are want out from the system, because again, this is a system that has been subsequently or afterwards, if you like, been supplanted above the natural or the real system that was there to begin with, you know.
I mean, you know, and this is why when we write a lot of documents these days, we're very careful to say that, you know, we are a man, or in my case, a woman, born on the land. In other words, you don't get jurisdiction or authority over me because I wasn't birthed, and I wasn't birthed on water. I'm of the land, over which you have no authority unless I grant you it.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Yes. And, you know, before, Mary, you were talking about national debt, that that's a big, originator, so to speak, why we've gotten in this mess that we're in right now. That implies to me, at least, that's this big international kind of organizations that are behind the creation of this. We could, for instance, then talk about the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. Do you think that they are, you know, a big crook, so to speak, in this matter, and one of the originators on why we're living in the system we are living in right now?
Yeah, I wonder if you happen to see Aaron Russo's flick called From Freedom to Fascism.
Yes, I saw it a while back, yes.
Yeah, it's awfully negative, but he did mention one thing that I think is worth noting, and that is that he had a conversation with one of the Rothschilds. Wasn't it the Rothschilds?
With, I think it was Nicholas Rothschild or something like that, one of his sons, David's sons, I think.
Yeah, I think he's the baby, but I don't know. Anyway, and he essentially said, here's what's going to happen, and it was just crazy, and I think Rousseau kind of said, like, why are you doing that? And I don't recall a specific answer, but to me, what came over was, well, because we can.
Yes.
Like, why not?
Yes.
It's a game for us.
It's
Congress is a game to these people. They created this craziness, and they thought, hey, we can rule the world. We can control all the people in all the world. And, hey, what fun. Let's try this.
Yes.
So I don't... You know, I'm not saying that they're evil. I actually think they are, but
yes.
I'm not saying they're evil. I'm saying this is just their role on this planet. They just said they came up with a scathingly brilliant concept, and they said, let's try this. Let's see what happens. So they implemented a banking system, which was based on debt, which
yes.
is insanity, as you know, is based on usury. And usury is ethically... or I guess I should say it's unethical.
Yes.
It's just something you would not do to somebody you love.
Exactly, and the important thing here as well, I think, that you mentioned is that they haven't asked permission from anyone to do this. They just kept themselves in a position just to do it. They have done it, and I'm drawn back to that old statement that if you're I don't know what the originator of it is from, but it basically states that if you're dumb enough, so to speak, to go along with it, then you kind of deserve to go along with it. And that's the kind of mentality behind some of these people, that they have this idea that, if you're not looking at the details and studying the system that you're involved in, you're potentially might be fooled by it. And to a certain extent, I agree with that, because you need to know what the system is all about, right? If you're going to, especially if you're in the system that is that you can utilize, because what you have explained for us here is that if you're in this structure, in this system, you can actually use it to your benefit. But that means that you have to be smart enough in order to learn how to operate it. Isn't that right?
That's right. And the thing that we find most annoying, of course, is that most people don't even want to know this.
Yes.
And so we're forced to walk away and say, well, darn it all, watch out. And especially people, who are, the old, you're never a prophet in your own land, you can say it to your friends, and they just sort of say, well, I don't want to talk about that right now. And I think, well, okay, I mean, you can only lead a horse to water, but if they have no interest in their own personal survival, then, I can't want something for someone more than he wants it for himself. So,
yes.
I think they're going to be out of luck, and then they'll wonder why. They'll wonder what happened. And, yes, I do think it's our job. Now, here's what we have against us, of course, is a fraudulent education system.
Yes, of course.
Fraud.
Of course.
Talk about darling little active children to listen to this programming, this nonsense about, oh, good grief, it drives me crazy. I mean, and then, of course, you have to say, what parent would do that to a child to put him someplace where... Well, don't get me started on the education system. Pardon me, the school system. I don't have a problem with education. It's schooling. It's definitely just wrong for children. But here's the thing, and I said to a friend, I said, it's funny. My parents' generation missed the boat completely. Their parents saw the shift. Like, my grandparents must have seen the shift. They must have witnessed that there was something really wrong. For example, I had one of my grandfathers used to write an article in the Toronto paper way back in the 30s, and one of his bylines, he used to have a column, and one of his bylines was, "We are being governed and taxed to death." Well, when I saw that, I jumped out of my chair. I said, good God, it's in my DNA. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But the point was, he knew there was something wrong. And so did I, unbeknownst. But you see, my father or my parents' generation, they missed the whole thing. They didn't witness it going from real to unreal. And their parents didn't know enough to say, this is the way it used to be, and look how bad it is now. Mm. So they kind of missed the whole thing, and they didn't live long enough to hear me say to them, look, you were the generation that was completely unconscious.
Mm.
At least my grandfather knew there was something wrong. But I'm not saying that my parents didn't have a glimpse of it. I'm just saying they were powerless. They were raised in the bad system, and they weren't powerful enough to do something about it. So my grandparents' generation knew there was something wrong, and here we are, two generations later, doing something about it, because we've gotten the message that we're it, and if we don't do something about it, we're all sunk.
Yes, yes. Hasn't it maybe something to do as well? It depends on the nature of the time that you're living in. If you're kind of in a happy state, so to speak, if your surrounding is good, you're having a good job, you have the money, you have kind of no reason to upset the system, right? Then you don't want to rock the boat in that position. But if you're under some kind of pressure or the system that you're in isn't providing for you, then you consequently begin to ask questions as well. So in a way, it's kind of good that these kind of minor little tragedies, if you will, that, you know, temporarily financial system is a bit low, but that spawns people to actually ask questions about the system itself and the nature of it. Isn't that right?
Perfect. You are right on. That's exactly it. Let's face it, we all know wealthy people who say, well, I'm hardly going to do something about it. It's worked for me.
Yes.
But we know way more people who have been beaten up. I mean, I said to a friend yesterday, I said, I don't even think I associate with anybody who hasn't been to jail.
Really?
Do you know what I mean? There's just so many people who have gotten into some trouble, some form of trouble, from the alleged authorities. They're not authorities, but because it's spreading, they're so desperate, they're picking on people that, you know, 50 years ago, if you heard they were in trouble with the law, my God, this was unheard of.
Mm.
But now it's everybody.
Mm.
I mean, everybody knows somebody that's in trouble. So, you're right. We could look at this as a blessing in disguise, because that's what builds the fire under us, right, and makes us move.
Yeah.
Because how many of us would have continued to sit back? In fact, I get letters and emails all the time from people who say, you know, I was just going along, like everything was, well, I guess it's good enough. And then suddenly, bam, I got hit with this. Well, now I'm taking a look at it. Well, this is actually good. I mean, I'm sorry that people are losing their houses and worse.
Of course.
Being locked up. But at least it's forcing people to say, okay, we got it. There's something wrong here. We
yes.
need to fix this. We need to take a look at it. Now, I will say this. Unfortunately, for the past dozen years or so, which is as long as I've been doing this, we've been fighting them. We've been saying, you can't do this to us. And, of course, that's absolutely the wrong way to tackle anything, never mind this. So, fortunately, somebody got it into his brain to say, maybe this is supposed to work for us. Maybe this has been designed to work for us. Let's take a look at that and see where that might be. Well, sure enough, he came up with, it's written in their laws. They're supposed to be working for us. We just got these rogue agents in there temporarily who shouldn't be there. They're just, you know, selfish, arrogant bastards. Oh, pardon me.
That's fine. You can say it.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, you know, who are essentially just taking advantage of a situation.
Yes.
And they're not serving their brothers. And that's going to come back and bite them. It really will. You know, they're going to be sorry someday that they've hurt their fellow man, because you can't get away from that stuff, can you? So anyway, the way to fix it is simply to say, do your job, and if you're not going to do your job, then I will file a commercial lien against you, and that will freeze everything, and that'll make you do your job. So it's kind of, but you don't tell them, you just do it.
Sure.
Now, it's a bit of a process, filing this commercial lien. It's not that hard, but it's, you know, you kind of have to sort of know what you're doing, and most people don't.
How about lawyers? Is there any kind of people in regards to how this operates that you actually can, go to and ask for this, or is that a bad idea to go to a lawyer or something like that?
Well, number one, lawyers don't know what we're doing.
Okay, right.
Have made the effort to find out.
Right.
They're completely in the dark. In other words, you think about people who have been misled. Holy jumping. So not only do they not know, if you go to them, because they're so dependent upon their position, like they've been so brainwashed, they'll defend their position right or wrong. So there's really no point in talking to them, right? So the other thing is, so if you hire an attorney to represent you, well, now you've just given away your sovereignty. Right, because you're not declaring that you're a man on the land and you can manage your own affairs.
Yes.
You're crying to somebody saying, "Will you help me?" Well, that doesn't get you anywhere, does it? So,
yes.
So I'd leave the attorneys out of it. They don't know; they're not going to help you.
Yes.
Unless you got one who's got an open mind, but I've never met one. Anyway.
So, I mean. Let's see here, for people that are then interested to kind of in really following up this, and let's say that the listeners are in the U.S., they're in Canada, Australia, or even somewhere in Europe, in Scandinavia, what would you recommend the first thing to do? I guess go through your book, of course, and read that thoroughly. But then at that point, is there a website somewhere you can go in order to find out more about more the exact names of the documents, etc., you know, to get things going, to get started on this?
You know, I wish there were a very straightforward place to go. There's a whole lot on the internet about this, but it's confusing and complicated and convoluted because, you know, I read a lot of stuff and I think, well, he could have put that into one page, and I don't want to read 50.
Yes.
And there's audios and there's all kinds of stuff. And the only thing, what I'm intending to do is as I grasp better and better what's really going on, I intend to put my grasp of it on my blog. And even at that, if I come up with something that I think is particularly brilliant on my blog, I will, by that I mean if I find something that's brilliant, on my blog I will direct people to it. But I have this feeling that my job, because people write these documents and I read them, and first of all, they're too long, and second, they're badly written. And that annoys me because I think, well, now I don't know who you're talking about. Who's they? So it sort of bothers me. So as I come to an understanding about what this is really all about, I write an article about it and I post it. And not only does that help me understand what I'm doing, but I think it makes it easier for other people. Now, I'm not saying that I've written the best stuff out there. I'm just saying I think I'm good at making it succinct and well written, presuming that I grasp the concept accurately. But I wouldn't write anything unless I did. So if it's not there, it's because I don't get it. But
right.
I'm catching on like way, way, way better and faster because I'm sort of doing some of the research here.
Yes.
And even if that happens to be studying other people's stuff. But I just have to say stuff because it's in funny places, it's convoluted, it's really long, it's hard to grasp, and it's kind of annoying. So I wish I could direct everybody someplace, like, go read this.
Yes.
But I can't. I can't. I can say, listen to Winston Schrout on Monday evening, but you see, now that's really late for you. Because Monday evening is something like 7 o'clock my time, I think. So that's, you know, the middle of the night to you. So,
yes.
But he's on truthradio.com. If you feel, I beg your pardon, I think he archives, the fellow who's on there archives it.
Okay.
But what I've also found, though, is he's hard to hear on that, but that could just be my particular situation. But there's a lot of people talking about, you know, the best thing might be just to Google 1099 OID, and as long as you're clear, though, that you're not going to just a typical accounting website. You know, I did that myself once, and I got onto a page where somebody's trying to tell somebody how to file taxes, and it had nothing to do with what we were talking about. You know?
Right, right.
So it really just will take keep looking.
Yes.
And as I say, though, and this is not to promote my blog. I don't gain anything from my blog. There's no advertising.
If it's good information on there, then people need to go there and find out. Yes. And we want to have that as a resource as well. So go ahead and get it out there, you know.
Yeah, that's it. And so I will say that when I post something on my blog, it's because I've grasped the next concept and I'm pretty clear on what we're up to. And I keep it reasonably short. Like that most recent one was 5 pages. So.
Do you have any plans to kind of compile the information in some form, either in a book form or a short video or some kind of presentation? Any plans to that at all?
Well, I would. I mean, I did think of putting all the articles into a book, but then I figure, well, if they're already posted on the blog, then people can go back through and just take a look at them. And none of
them
are very long.
Sure.
And a lot of them are thought-provoking. For example, how to handle, in other words, the biggest cause of the authority issue is the fact that we answer their questions. And we're not meant to answer their questions. They're the public servants. We're meant to answer theirs. So I wrote an entire article on that. And it's like when you get it through your skull, you go, oh, good grief. That's how I got myself into trouble, was I answered them. They don't have any authority over me, and they don't have any authority to ask me any questions. You know, what's your name? Who are you?
Yes.
Right? Same as we treat somebody we
don't want to
talk
to.
Yeah. Yeah, like why have we fallen for this? It's because we were raised with a lifetime of it. You know, we'll be, you know, the policeman is your friend.
Right.
Yeah, maybe 75 years ago, maybe, or maybe even 50 years ago, but not now.
Yeah.
They're out to collect. They're out to collect. They're revenue collectors.
Yes.
So, I wish I could direct you to something that's right on top, but it's all over the place. In other words, if you Google it, you'll find something. But
yes.
But stick with my blog too, which you've already said is, well, it's spiritualeconomicsnow.net, and I'll be writing it as I get it, like as I know.
Yes.
So,
very good. We'll have that linked up on our website again, of course, for people who want to dive into it further, and keep an eye on there, of course, as you do updates and so forth. But I think this is a good place to begin to round things up here for this time. But, you know, Mary, we'd love to have you back here further on if you have time for us and talk more about this and see what new comes up. And at that point, you might have, you know, compile something more or have a more kind of... you know, in presentation form to have some kind of a, you know, crash course in this, because it's a big subject. It's kind of daunting to get into it just, you know, from zero. At first, you don't understand anything of the official, you know, system to begin with, but then you're trying to break it down and you know, say that it's another way. It's a process of unlearning in a way, actually. So, you know, but we'll definitely keep track on that. And again, I want to thank you very much for coming on the program. Is there anything else you'd like to kind of leave us with before we end here in this segment?
No, I can't think of anything other than to say that yes, I grasp that it's like a head full to say whoa, what you know, I mean, I got that. And there's sections of understanding certain areas, but the truth is it's a whole lot simpler now than it used to be. We were all over the map on this stuff, and now we've really, really snugged it up. And so anybody who's starting out learning this stuff now is actually going to have a much easier time of it than we ever did. In other words, it's gotten easier because we're now in the right direction and we're seeing it. We're witnessing results, so we're saying, aha, finally. And that's why, by the way, I would not go on any other radio show over the past, oh, I'd say about a year or so, because I thought, you know, I just don't have anything great to say. But when you contacted me, I said, okay, now we can get this out, because we've made leaps and bounds on the information. So
yes.
The other thing is I thank you, because this allows me to essentially educate those who might not otherwise hear it. You know, I mean,
yes.
I'm over here across the pond, and so I'm grateful that you caught this, and want to tell your listeners about what's really going on. I appreciate that.
Yes, yes, very good. Thank you again very much for coming on. And keep us posted, and of course, keep up the good work. And we'll see how things progress along the line, okay?
Okay.
Of course, that was some very powerful information, but I wanted to ask, so the gist of it is, you go into Sears, you buy a washer and dryer, you pay $1,200 for it, you fill out the 1099 no ID form and the other form she suggested, send it to the Treasury Department, and they send you your money back?
No, it
eventually.
Don't go that way.
Okay, I didn't get the gist.
Yeah, you're going to have to go back and re-listen to it. What the best thing to do would be to, because see, you're talking about dealing with something that you don't want to make a mistake with.
Absolutely.
So the best thing to do is to type into YouTube, Mary Cross, and get this entire series. It starts from 1 to 11. We did the first four yesterday, and then we came back today and did from 5 to 11. And go to the sites and stuff. But the overall objective, and we're going to get into that tonight, sort of bring a little bit more clarity, because what you're attempting to do now is something that I refused to do when I found out about it. Well, actually, I actually did it and succeeded, but I say, no, this is
you
not
did,
enough.
You did this particular act?
No.
With
no,
the treasury?
I didn't do that particular thing. No. But what I did do is I did set off a few companies, and, you know, I found out in one company, I forbid them. And when I did it, I didn't even send them any anything from the IRS. They just sent me a letter back and say, well, you know, it's, you know, this has been canceled, it's discharged, and, you know, and I'm saying, well, okay. But I didn't like that because I didn't understand everything about it. And then when I start studying more and more about it, then I said, okay, I see what I need to be doing now. And that was before I had even ran into Mary Cross information. But then I just stopped. I halted on the discharging of debt and all that old stuff. I just stopped. And then I got a call from up north, and a brother said, well, look, I got some stuff. I'm going to show you how to collapse the entire bond. And they sent it to me, and they explained it to me and told me about all the be cautious and this, that, and the other. So I said, well, okay, I see this right here is equivalent to arming a hydrogen bomb. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put this to the side. And then I had another brother come down here that had actually armed the bomb, and was actually, he and I was actually riding on the highway, and he was actually using and was explaining to me how he was actually able to do that. He showed me the documents, called it off, and it was quite a bit to grasp the way that he was doing the stuff, but it's just like anything else. Once you learn it, then you can actually do it. What I decided to do, because I had a lot of things on my plate, and I said, well, I need to do some other things too, because I have to look at what's in the minds or in the brains of my people and how they are going to fare. Because in order for me to do something and put it out there, I got to be able to explain it. Guide the people that's going to try to do it and all of this stuff too, just like the driver's license, with the cancellation of contracts and all that. So now we're working on our final act, which is dealing with that bond. And we're going to go all out, and we're going to actually do it, and that'll be the end of that. But what you're talking about now is the actual operation of, in my opinion, based on what I know about it, is dealing with the nickel and dime side of it. But you want to do it from a whole different perspective. So we're going to get into that next tonight and show you some other things that we really need to get clear on, because it seems like you're hearing some of the same stuff over and over and over, but you really need to get clear on this stuff. You really do, in order to deal with this thing, because it's big and it's real, and there's a difference between knowing something and actually getting out on the pavement and actually performing it. And I have some students that are doing quite well, and I do have some students that could recite more about what I told them that I've forgotten, but they haven't done anything. They you know, when they get on the pavement and actually come face to face with realization of what they're actually doing, then they falter. You know, we got those who have taken the information that was sound, went inside the courtroom and dropped the ball. And because they're under the impression that there's a cookie-cutout situation. You know, not with this kind of thing, because we are dealing with criminals. And so we got to not only be able to deliver, but we got to pretty much do like Walter Payton, if you know who he was, and O.J. Simpson, either Earl Campbell, you got the Bob and Weave, or Ali, you got to add a little bit as you go along in the correct response, and the only way you're going to do it, you're going to have the power and the power code knowledge. Even though you got the documents, everything is in place, you're putting it in place, you're moving, but you still got to close the door at every turn. So when I sensed that, I realized that, and so I backed off of what I was doing because I didn't want to continue to deal with the nickel and dime situation. I've had students call me, discharged the car, got that out of the way. I got another brother up north, and this brother called me all the time. I mean, he's a bad boy. He's just doing it. But then he messed around and asked me about something. He told me, well, you know, I didn't know that. I said, wait a minute, whoa. I said, so you've been concentrating on this right here, and you haven't been studying them here. So anyway, just stay tuned, and what we're going to do is we're going to start with this next plugin. This plugin is called Who Am I? And this guy is going to give you a breakdown of some stuff. And Mary touched on it tonight about understanding the etymology of the words. That's very important because this thing is very intricate, and these are the tools that you can use to dissect this fraud completely and do it. Not just a thing where you just get a little piece of information and just run with it. No. Yeah, another question?
No.
Can hardly hear you.
No, I'm sorry.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Okay. Yeah, he's real good now.
Oh, yeah. I had it on speaker because it's easier for me to write and listen at the same time. But, no, I don't have another question right now.
All right. Well, okay, we're going to run with this. This will last 15 minutes, and then we'll be back. If you got another question,
okay,
you can raise your hand. If there's anybody else out there that have another question, you can raise your hand. And now we're going to be gone for about approximately 15 minutes, and then we'll be back, okay? So y'all sit.
Hi, today we're going to do a small presentation about who you are or what you are. Or But all your life you probably presumed that you knew who you were, and you never really understood a lot of the things that were happening. So this little presentation may help you to understand who you are, or who am I? Am I a name, or am I a man, or a woman? But understanding the difference will lead us to some very, very different conclusions. So when you were born, your mother or father filled out a form similar to the form below, okay, which is, it's pretty standard in most countries. It'll be slightly different, but it'll have information like where you're born, your Christian names, your mother and father's name, etc. We're not going to go too deep into the form on this presentation because we've done it in another one, but your mother and father filled it out to the best of their knowledge at the time. But unfortunately, my father didn't know what he was doing, and the details in column 3, if you have a look at the details in column 3 there, where he entered it, we'll go a bit closer here, we'll bring it up at, it says, if child stillborn, to be entered in this column, or to be noted in this column. Now, unfortunately, that made us stillborn. So, that set a chain of events into place that we need to rectify, because the register by entry into his book entered the stillborn and issued a birth certificate with a name on it. The name on the birth certificate is what allows the man to trade in commerce, and that's how we have done everything, all our driver's licenses, bank accounts, everything have been with the birth certificate as a means of identification. But it says on the birth certificate you can't do that. So a born certificate, however, would allow the man to be free. So now we need to explore what a born certificate is. Right. Name is a noun. Noun, the part of speech that is used to name a person, place, thing, quality, or action. Okay, so let's look a bit further into a noun and see. Nouns name people, places, and things. One class of nouns is abstract. Your five senses cannot detect this group. It cannot be seen, heard, smelled, tasted, or touched. Okay, so your name is actually an abstract noun. Being a fixture on paper, you can't be seen or heard. So just try this experiment. Write your name on a piece of paper. And it doesn't matter how much you talk to that piece of paper, it can never answer you back. It's a fiction. It's on paper. It's dead. Whenever you give your name or answer to your name or sign anything in your name, you cannot be seen or heard. Try it. Write it on the paper. You cannot. It will not answer you. The living man can, but the paper cannot answer you. And this is the major reason that we never ever go to court, because we cannot be seen or heard. It's a fictitious. Only corporations go to the court. We have to now try and identify who we are, man or corporation. We're going to use our printout to break this presumption of whether we're a man or a corporation. Now, in some places around the world, you will have a birth certificate. Here in New Zealand, we have a birth certificate and then a separate one called a printout. So don't be confused. Okay, now let's look into what happened. When you were born, you were delivered in the delivery room, and delivery creates a trust. Delivery creates a trust. So let's look at the parts of that trust. There's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, or in religious terms, the Holy Trinity. So we need to explore the trust relationship a bit further and see which part everyone has to play in this jolly little threesome. Okay, John 14 tells us, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Now, there's a big, big clue. No one comes to the Father except through me, through Jesus or Christ or Christian. So the Father, the Son must go through the Holy Ghost to inherit the Father's estate. All right, have we got that? The Holy Ghost is the third party in this, but it's kind of a transient role, so we're going to have a look a bit further and see what the roles get further and further and more involved. So the Father is the surname. Thou shalt not take thou Father's name in vain. The Father is also, or the surname is also, the crown. A lot of misconceptions here, but I can assure you that I have tested it in court, and you are the crown. And the Father was also the creator. The Father created his Son. His only begotten Son. Unfortunately, he gave him names, and the given names have got him into a lot of trouble. But the Son is the de jure party, or the only truthful party in this. And he is the only one who can give life to this trust. But we have to now know how to do that. So let's look into the role of the Holy Ghost. Now, this is a vacant position. It's a vacant position. It needs an agent to come in there. So let's have a look at a bit further into it. anyone can fill the role of the Holy Ghost. So if we want to do it, we must enter as the person's personal representative or Christian. That is how the Son comes to the Father, is through Christ, Christian. We have to be born again Christian. How do we know this? Because the Wills Act 2007, in the interpretation section, which is section 6, it tells us personal representative means administrator, executor, or trustee. Okay, so what we need to look at here is becoming the administrator or the executor. We do not want to be the trustee. The trustee always pays. So we need to someone else to fill that role. Okay, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, again, getting deeper and deeper into the rabbit hole. If a mercantile agent fills this role, now a mercantile agent is anyone with a commission, police, IRD, courts, anyone who wants to raid your trust account, that's the trust set up in your name, they come in as a mercantile agent with a commission. And here's how they do it. Well, in New Zealand, this is how they do it. They come in under the District Courts Act 1947. Section 49 of that act tells us, trustees, once again, trustees, executors, and administrators. Any trustee, executor, or administrator may sue and be sued in a court in like manner as if he were a party in his own right. Now, they do not have the right, but they can act as if they were a party in their own right. Without joining us or any of the parties beneficially, because we are the beneficiary, the Son is the beneficiary, without any of the parties beneficially interested in the trust or estate and shall be considered as representing such parties in the proceeding. So therefore they come in as an agent for the Crown or an agent for us. And then the court, under Section 2, the court may at any stage of the proceeding order any of the such parties to be made parties to the proceeding. So therefore, if we dishonor them in any way, we immediately become a party to it. But as they have come in as trust, as executors or administrators, they then give us the role of trustee and we pay the bill. Okay, now let's look at the difference between birth and born, because this is the key to it, and we'll show you the different roles between the public and the private side. Now what we're looking at is having a name on the birth side, which is the public side, or the debit side of the ledger, and on the credit side of the ledger we have an identity. Ask a cop or anyone in the military for their name and they just give you their serial number. Okay? That's their identity. Because they're a public agent, they don't have to give us a name because they're operating in private. So they give us their identity. Okay, the name applies for privileges, applies for bank accounts, and remains a child. We have to be protected because we never grow up. We cannot be seen or heard. We're a child forever unless we do something about it, which is to claim back our estate with an identity so that we become sovereign. But when we do, we must notify everyone ourselves because we're no longer getting the privileges of the public side. On the public side, you also have the disadvantages. Right, we've already established that the public has a name. Okay, so on the private side, we can be Christian. The public side, as we've already said, is dead. The private side, or the credit side of the ledger, we're alive. On the public side, we're a corporation or treated as a corporation. That's why they can drag us into court. On the private side, as long as we stay on the private side, we can be sovereign. On the public side, we have a reserve bank. On the private side, we have the treasury. When you're dealing with the reserve bank, you must buy stuff with reserve bank currency. On the private side, we set off the public side perpetuates debt while the private side balances the books. I know what I'd rather do. On the public side we have ego. On the private side we have spiritual. We have argument. And where do we go when we have argument? We go to the court. The judge says, I've heard argument. I've listened to your arguments. On the private side, we must be peaceful. On the public side, we have dishonor. And on the private side, we are honorable. We honor every presentment that they give to us. On the public side, we have the Reserve Bank coat of arms, and note that the keys point down to the kingdom of hell, whereas on the private side, the keys to the kingdom of heaven on earth are on the private side. Now, once again, John 14:6, Jesus answered, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Indel that upon your brain, because you need to now establish an identity. And this can only be done if you know how to go to the Father through Christ, Christian. So we'll now show you how to obtain your printout. This is in New Zealand. This is the way that you do it. You'll go to this website, Department of Internal Affairs. I'm sure it'll be the same in most countries around the world. And this is what ours looks like. That's the button you press there to get your birth certificate or your printouts. Now, you don't be confused. In other places, you have a long form birth certificate and short form birth certificate, etc. But this is the form that we fill out to obtain our printouts or birth certificates. But this is what you want there, the printouts. And I'm going to show you the quantity there. You may want more than one of these. I'm not going to tell you why, but you may want more than one. Or if you're not in New Zealand, I'll show you how to do it. Google is your friend, but you don't seem to understand Google is your friend. Someone thinks you're too lazy to use Google before asking a question. Once you start using Google and looking stuff up for yourself, your neural pathways open and more information flows through. Trust me. Now, when your printout does finally arrive, or if you're overseas and you get your birth certificate, the proper one, hold it up to the light and you will see that it is on security paper, which gives you undeniable proof that you are a security for the national debt. Now, we need to establish our identity. The number on your printout and your given names is your identity.
Okay, we're back, Morris. If anybody got any questions about that, go ahead and raise your hands now and open up your line. And you can ask your question and we can get some of that straightened out. Because that's quite interesting. It's not confusing to me, but anyway. 412. Come on, Lisa.
You said the numbers on your birth certificate, when you hold it up to the light, you can see it's on security paper. But the numbers on your birth, can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound kind of like far away.
Okay, I took you off a speaker because I'm writing and listening.
Okay, we got it.
Okay, you ready?
On the birth certificate. One thing we got to understand is, okay, this guy here, he's in New Zealand, and of course they have things anchored in different places to different things to make the system work. And, of course, in the United States, they have the same thing. It's tied to the Bible. And so a lot of what they're from the natural laws of the actual African records is what it is. But what they have to do in order to make it make sense to them and other people that they know. They have to explain it in certain terms. But it all comes from us. So that explains the word Christianity and, you know, Christ and all of that stuff there. But anyway,
right.
And the same thing happens inside the United States and other countries, Scandinavia, all the European countries do the same thing. They don't have any choice because that's what everything is built on. But when we are talking about law, we can only be talking about one thing, and that's the spiritual laws. And this is what we had prior to any religion being introduced to us.
Mm-hmm.
But what is your question now?
Okay, so he, like right towards the end when you turned him off, he was saying the numbers on your birth certificate and that name on there is your identification number, right?
Okay, he's talking about what's called a CUSIP number. The CUSIP number, a lot of people call, see, what they're doing is this. There are a lot of birth certificates that had the CUSIP number. The CUSIP number appears right on the face of the birth certificate. And a lot
mm-hmm.
of cases, I think you might find that they moved it on the birth certificate. And then eventually they took it off the birth certificate. But you can get the CUSIP number because they you still have the title that we're using as and believing is a name. And we're identifying with that. But what we don't understand that you don't have a name until you give yourself one.
Right, and we're just corporations.
So the best way to deal with the CUSIP number, which would match the receipt to the bond, born bond. Birth certificate, that's a receipt. So the best way to deal with that is to hire someone with experience in tracing that to get that information for you and give you that CUSIP number when you get the CUSIP number. Now you can officially put this thing together. It all matches. All the numbers are in place. You can do 1099 OID and your 1040D and get those documents and stuff. But once you start operating in the private side with the use of the bond, because there are several ways that you can use the bond, and that's why
mm-hmm.
I referred everybody to go to my wall. Those of you who are on Facebook, you can go to my Facebook wall. You can scroll down, and you will see a video there, and that video is called Removing Invisible Chains, and that's where this guy explains step by step how to access the bond and get that done, and you can actually collapse it. And there's been so much valuable information that match what I have on the documentation for collapsing the bond. It's incredible. Because he even said about the treasury, you know, the treasury agents to come and come to your home, and they go everything because they want to know how you're going to use all these millions of dollars and stuff and what you're going to do, how you want it. Do you want all this one lump sum? Do you want this annually? Do you want this monthly? Or do you just need the card to go along with this to use as a credit card? Or how do you want this done? Or do you want to just collapse the bond? We totally off the grid. You know, I'm in the private. I live in the private. I operate in the private. I'm never expected to be considered to do anything about a crime or any of that. So it's totally up to you. There are many phases. But all that's explained to you in that video. For those of you who don't, if you're not on Facebook or you just got on Facebook or you've been on Facebook, send me a friend request to Amana Bay. And you can go over there and look at that. I'll be adding that to the library next week. But we got some more.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, I don't have Facebook, so I wouldn't be able to see it on your Facebook page.
You already sent it to you, but we got to figure out how you
yeah.
How you
can do
it. Open
okay.
it up. You already got it.
Okay. Okay.
Now we're gonna get back into some more of this, and but right now we're finna just deal with the property taxes. So we're gonna, you know, already brought this out before. But I want to make sure I bring it out again, and then we're going to go back into from start to finish on this birth certificate thing, because this is frontier. We got to deal with it.
Right.
We got to deal with it.
Okay. I'll do my research first, and then I'll save my question for after I do my research, because then my answer may be in the research, the question that I have. It may be in the research, and I think I'm just antsy because this information is so amazing, you know, and I just want to learn as much as I can. But I'll do my research. And if the question remains, then I'll ask.
All right. Then we'll meet you line, and then we're going to go on forward. We're going to go into a commercial break, and then we'll come back. And I'll start off into these property taxes, and then we'll come back to the burn bond. Okay. Mose, we're going to take a little quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to continue with what we got going with this whole thing here. Okay? All right,
y'all hold on a moment. Well, just what is it that new debt elimination do? What are they all about? Well, to get all the information on new debt elimination, go to www.newdebtelimination.net. That's newdebtelimination.net. Learn all about what we do right there. All the information in regards to us and what we do involving our natural food production, growing organic food and herbs and spices, and teaching of contract law, and many other things are described for you in detail at www.newdebtelimination.net.
All right, I think we got Steve with us now. Steve, you there?
I'm here.
Alrighty, he made it.
Well, I was trying to log into, I guess, what was the other line, and then it dumped me and told me to come over here and do it, so.
Okay, well, hey, welcome aboard here. We were just keeping the ball in the air for you. So this is a long-awaited show. Everybody's been bugging me, and everyone's got their popcorn, and they're sitting on the edge of their seat, so.
Popcorn?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's supposed to be milk duds, man.
That's right. I'm with you. I sit corrected. Milk duds. So, okay. We warmed them up. They're salted and buttered. The audience. Told them this whole deal with property taxes is rebutting the presumption for commercial use. We are not using our property for commercial use because this is where we eat, sleep, poop, and play. As I
there you go.
Up, I got to clean that up. We eat, sleep, poop, and play. You cannot tax this. So I'll hand it over to you. And what do you got to add to that?
Well, technically, it's a substantive right to have some place to live. And you can't tax rights is pretty much what it boils down to.
Right.
Bear with me just for a second. I'm trying to get this light out here on the porch so I can hang out and smoke and read my stuff, you know?
There you go. Living the dream there, buddy.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. Okay, light on. There we go. Bingo. Now I am happening. The
cool,
command
cool.
post is underway.
Cool. This information needs to get out, stop the oppression and the tyranny. So,
let me see. First off, man, I ain't a teacher. I'm not an instructor at this crap. I'm just an everyday guy who realized that something was really wrong, that our socialist communist state of Florida was somehow being able to steal properties, people's homes from them, and I don't know, 6-7 years ago, I had a friend of mine that people like, some kids I grew up with, basically were kids, I guess, and their mother had to sell this lakefront home that they grew up on and lived on because she couldn't afford to pay the property taxes, and kind of got me going and said, there's something wrong with this. This just doesn't make any sense that that's the way it works in land of the free and home of the brave. So I started doing some research here and looking through the Florida statutes, the Florida Constitution. I got turned on to the Florida Administrative Code, which was a great help. That's the key, is the government code in your state. That usually lays out the procedures and all the details of who's got to sign what, who's got to do everything in order to have these so-called assessments and returns and everything all done correctly to get them on the assessment roll. So I took several years to go through all this stuff and try to figure out and put heads or tails together. And what I came up with here was a lot of really great stuff, mainly in the state constitution. But as what I did, I just kind of laid out some notes here, some case laws and things I found here in Florida when I was doing the research here. And I guess the big key here to understand is, first thing is, your property, in order for it to be taxable, must be exercising a taxable privilege. In other words, you must be conducting some type of business upon it or making some kind of profit that would be considered to come under what would be considered to be a calling, privilege. What's the other words they use?
And that's only under license, right? That's only under license, because you know I'm when people get confused and say, "Oh, hey, I'm building ham radios and selling them out of my garage." That's not taxable. That's not commercial. Only if you were to have a license.
Well, or basically have a sign up and you're incorporated as Bo and Rocco's buy a radio kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Then there would be an excise license, occupational license maybe, and then if you have employees and things, you're going to be caught up in the IRS stuff as far as the withholding and all that garbage that they do to people that are incorporated technically. Even the definition of taxpayer in the Florida statutes is corporation, or a legal entities, I believe is the word they use, which I have this, we'll go through this little thing here I laid out here to give you guys a pretty good idea of what the court systems have said about this and how it has to be conducted, and what the Florida Constitution, the Florida Administrative Code, and the Florida statutes which support the Constitution of the state of what is allowed to be taxed, what the property appraiser is supposed to be taxing, how he's supposed to derive the, what's the word I'm looking for? How are you supposed to derive the, let's say, just value of the property that's being used for the taxable privilege?
Sure.
So, just sort of run down the list here. I have a case here from Gray versus Winthrop. It's a Florida case out of the 4th District Court of Appeals from the 1975. And it makes it perfectly clear that a state may not tax persons' property or interests which are not within its territorial jurisdiction and subject only to applicable and controlling federal law. State taxation is authorized, limited, and regulated by the state constitution and by state statutes enacted thereunder. And that comes from Gray versus Winthrop, Florida case. I don't know, should I give out the whole number? You think anybody's interested?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right, that'd be Gray versus Winthrop, which is Winthrop, and that's at 115 Florida 721,156 Southern Directory, which would be SO270, at page 94, and that would be the 1978 is what I got here. Okay. Then we got another case here that comes from the Department of Revenue versus Brookwood Associates out of the Florida District Court of Appeals, which is out of the Southern Directory, Section 184. And it states clearly that since the state can levy a property tax only on property having a citizen in the state, provisions requiring all property within the state to be subject to taxation will not be construed to include property which has no citizen. No citizens for taxation within the state. So now we're going to cover citizens here. When you look up citizens in the Black's Law Dictionary, 6th edition, it states, a location or place of a crime or business, or the right or power to tax it. Citizen property for tax purposes is determined by whether the taxing state has sufficient contact with personal property sought to be taxed to justify in fairness the particular tax. And that is case law from town of Caddy versus Alexander Construction Company out of Wisconsin. You can look it up in Black's Law Dictionary. Citus, S-I-T-U-S. It's a Latin word for, I don't know what it means, but I guess it means what I just read.
Right.
So let me flip pages here. And then we're going to, I guess, get more into basically the state constitution now. Well, okay, I have another definition of citus called business citus, which is even more explicit to really give you an idea what citus is all about. The citus acquired for tax purposes by one who carries on business in the state more or less permanent in its nature. A citus arises when notes, mortgages, tax sale certificates, and the like are brought into the state for something more than a temporary purpose and are devoted to some business use there and thus become incorporated with the property of the state for revenue purposes. A citus arises where possession and control of property right has been localized in some independent business or investment away from the owner's domicile so that it is substantially used and the value primarily attached to it and becomes an asset of the outside business. And that's a state case, state versus Atlantic Oil Production Company out of Oklahoma. Now, Florida statutes, 212.031. Tax on rental or license fee for use of real property. A1. It is declared to be the legislative intent that every person is exercising a taxable privilege who engages in the business of renting, leasing, letting, granting, or license for the use of any real property unless such property is used exclusively for dwelling units. Now we have the definition of taxpayer out of Florida Statutes 220.03. Means any corporation subject to the tax imposed by this code and includes all corporations for which a consolidated return is filed under Florida Statutes 220.131. Then there's another definition of taxpayer out of Florida Statutes 192.001. Taxpayer means the person or other legal entity in whose name an asset included in the agent of a timeshare period time holder. I don't know if I read it to make any sense. I'll do it one more time. Okay. Taxpayer means the person or other legal entity in whose name property is assessed, including an agent of a timeshare period time holder. Now we have the Florida State Constitution out of this. This is the 1885 Constitution, which is really clear here in the Section 16 out of Article 16. That property of all corporations, whether hereto or thereto incorporated, shall be subject to taxation unless such property is held and used exclusively for religious, scientific, municipal, educational, literary, or charitable purposes. Then I got a nice case here that even makes it more clear that taxing statutes and statutes conferring authority to impose taxes are to be strictly construed. That's Department of Revenue versus Brookwood Association out of Florida District Court of Appeals, 1st District. And that was case I read off earlier, had a little bit of stuff. And that was a really good case. And another case called Loeb that's really good here in Florida that cuts through it. Now we're back into the Florida statutes again. This comes under the exemption chapter, which is chapter 196. 196, 181, exemption of household goods and personal effects. There shall be exempt from all taxation to every person residing and making his or her permanent home in this state household goods and personal effects. Now let me make this clear. There shall be exempt from taxation to every person residing or making his or her permanent home in this state household goods and personal effects. Title to such household goods and personal effects shall be held, can be held individually or by entities jointly or in common with others. Now we get to the Florida Administrative Code, 12D-7.022, exemption of household goods and personal effects. Here, this defines what household goods and personal effects are. Only household goods and personal effects of the taxpayer, now remember, we're talking about taxpayers now, which are actually employed in the use of the serving of the creature comforts of the owner and not held for commercial purposes are entitled to the exemptions provided in Section 196-181 Florida Statutes. Creature comforts are things which give bodily comfort such as food, clothing, and shelter. Common commercial purposes include owning household goods and personal effects as stock and trade or as in furnishing and rental units. So, household goods and personal effects are to be exempt from taxation, and the Florida Administrative Code defines that as being creature comforts, which is defined as shelter. Now we go to the Black's Law Dictionary, 6th edition, and we look up the definition of shelter. In statutes relating to the provisions of food, clothing, and shelter for one's children, the term generally refers to a home with proper environments as well as protection from the weather. Now we're back into the Florida Statutes 196 Exemption Chapter .031, Exemptions of Homesteads. Every person who on January 1st has legal or equitable title, beneficiary title, or equity to real property in the state who resides thereon in good faith and makes his permanent home or her permanent home or permanent residence or the permanent residence of another or others legally or naturally dependent upon such person is entitled to exemption from all taxation. Now we got the Florida Constitution, Article 7, Section 3B, taxes, exemptions. They'll still be exempt from all taxation accumulated to every head of family residing in the state, household goods and personal effects valued by general law. So, I mean, point I'm making is if you start looking around through the codes, as like Rod Class and these guys will tell you, it's all code pleading. The statutes make it pretty clear to any jerk-off that lives on a street corner, if you read this, it makes it pretty clear that they have no authority to be taxing the place that you live in.
Absolutely.
And I got a bunch more. I mean, I just go on and on with this stuff. They talk about exemption from ad valorem taxes for exempt entities. Oh, and here we got the Florida State Constitution, Article 7, Section 6A, which is almost verbatim of 196.031. Every person who has the legal or equitable title to real estate and maintains thereon the permanent residence of the owner or other legally or naturally dependent upon the owner shall be exempt from taxation thereon. The real estate may be held by legal, equitable title, or by entities jointly or in common as a condominium or indirectly by stock ownership or membership, presenting the owners or members appropriately interested in the corporation, owning a fee. I hate reading these things, so sometimes the wording is so weird, you know. But right. When you read through this stuff, it's obvious. This is what I took to the property appraiser here in Orange County, and he took the property off the tax roll real fast.
Right. All this stuff is buried, and you're just bringing it to the light of day.
It took me 2 years to go through all this and put it together. So you have to get the Constitution. You got to put the statute that's enacted from the Constitution, then the government code that puts the procedure in play of how they're supposed to interpret what the Constitution says. Yeah, and if you don't really have a lot of experience at reading this stuff, it can take you quite some time. Luckily, my background isn't technical, so I'm used to reading technical manuals and assembly manuals and schematics and things. So, and that still took me a while to even do this myself, you know. But the point I'm making is from reading this stuff, and then I got tons of case law here I can go through to spend probably another hour. It's pretty much making clear what ad valorem taxes apply to the calling and all that stuff, which we can get into that here. I just mainly wanted to hit just the basic laws. And then they have a lot of procedural stuff, like the homestead exemption start here in the Florida Administrative Code 12D-7013, homestead exemptions. The head of family occupying the second story of a building as his home, and the first story of the building as his business, is entitled to claim a homestead exemption on the building. Now, point basically, what that's telling you is homestead exemption only applies to someone who lives on the property that they have their business on. If you're living in a neighborhood someplace where you have a little 200-foot by 150-foot square lot with a three-bedroom house and a garage and a swimming pool, you would never apply for homestead exemption there. From everything I'm seeing here, the property appraiser is not even supposed to be talking to you. But guess what? They do this to gain revenue, which makes it theft. If they're collecting money that they don't have any authority to collect, that's theft.
Exactly. And they're using the mails to do it. So, you know,
when you get ready to put your criminal complaint together, you can use the mail fraud, which is USC, I think, 1341, Title 18, 1341, 1343, I believe. They're falsifying records, which comes under 2071 Title 18. They're creating fictitious obligations, and I believe that's 514 or 513. And then they're also creating false securities. And that's 513. I get the two mixed up. 513, 514 are right together. One is false securities. The other one is creating fictitious obligations. And that's exactly what they're doing when they're putting property on the tax roll when they ain't supposed to be there.
Okay, Mo. Did y'all hear that? If anybody got any questions, go ahead and raise your hand. Now's the time to raise your hand. If you do not have any questions, then we're going to go directly into the born identity. We're going into the born identity. Any questions? Now we'll take a little quick break, and when we come back, then we will be going into the identity.
Freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. For those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana Elbay. That's T-A-R-A-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and of course B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request so you can actually see the documents for yourself. Peace.
G'day again out there in Fremantleland. There seems to be so much confusion with the identity, the born, the birth. Let's see if we can clear it up a bit more, a bit better in this short video presentation that I'm about to do. Now, what we're going to look at, as always, is the words that get us into the system and what we can discover from the words that they use against us. So we're going to have a look at how the birth process begins and see what each different word means. And this may help us come to the final conclusion. So contractions, this is what starts the birth process, is contractions. Now, what they're telling you is what's going to happen to you once you once the baby is born. They're going to actually contract the name or shorten the name from Master by taking out the A-S-T-E, and so that you're left with M-R, and you become Mr. Or Mistress, you become M-S, Miss. All right, the next part is the waters break. Now, this also is alluding to, we're going to be put under maritime law, or we're going to come under the laws of the water. And once again, it's confirmed here, because once the waters break, the baby enters the birth canal. Now, when a ship comes into harbour, they're berthed. They've only changed the E and the I, so the birth and the birthing of the ship and the birth of the baby are the same thing. So what they're telling us is that they're going to do certain things to get us under their maritime laws. Now, the next thing that you'll notice is that the baby is born in the delivery room. So we need to find out what a delivery room is. And once again, this deals with contracts or conveyancing. And conveyancing, if you really want to know, and I must say here, unless I put it on the screen, every definition that I use in this presentation is from Bouvier's Online Law Dictionary. So a conveyancing is the transferring of the title to land by one person to another person. Now, a person can be either a natural person or a corporation. So conveyancing is the transferring of the title. Okay, now delivery is the transferring of a deed from the grantor to the grantee in such a manner as to deprive him of the right to recall it. Or the delivery may be made and accepted by an attorney. This is indispensably necessary to the validity of a deed, except it be in the deed of a corporation, which, however, must be executed under the common seal. So this is how they get around it. They say that if they're acting as a corporation, all they need to do is use their common seal. But although, as a general rule, the delivery of a deed is essential to its perfection, it is never averred in pleading. We're not too much worried about the last bit there, but what they do is we are the only ones that actually can sign. So when they're dealing with us as corporations and they're acting as corporations, they use their common seal to do it. So let's now look at the next part that happens in the birth process, and that is the baby is wheeled off into the maternity ward. Once again, we need to look at these words. The state or condition of a mother, it is either legitimate or natural. The former is the condition of the mother who has given birth to legitimate children, while the latter is the condition of her who has given birth to illegitimate children. Right, they're telling us there that we're going to be made illegitimate children. So let's look at the last word there, maternity ward. Ward, domestic relations, an infant placed by authority of law under the care of a guardian. They're telling us what's going to happen to us here. Everything that they're telling us in the birth process tells us in these few words. Now, the next part is even more, throws more light onto it. While under the care of a guardian, a ward can make no contract whatever binding upon him. They're telling us we won't be able to make a contract binding upon us because we're a ward of the state, except for necessaries. Now, this is very important. If you are on on some kind of benefit, a solo person's benefit or anything, the necessities of life or your needs must be cared for. So you, if you have a need and you go into social welfare and you say, this is a necessity of life and I need it, not I want it, I need it, they must provide it because you are under their guardianship. So use that to your benefit. When the relation of guardian and ward ceases, the latter is entitled to have an account of the administration of his estate from the former. Now, this is what we're hoping to achieve with this presentation. Once we get our freedom, they must give us account of the administration of our estate. Now, this is when it's time to register your child. This is the department you're going to be dealing with. In New Zealand, this is. Other places have different names for them, but you'll find them all online. Google helps you out, no doubt. Okay, this comes directly from their site, how to register your birth, and then it tells us what a birth certificate is. A birth certificate is an official document containing registered information about a person's birth. You may obtain a certificate by providing the required details and paying the certificate fee. Certificates can be used for purposes such as getting a driver's license, enrolling at school, applying for welfare benefits. Ooh, I might have a word to say on that in a minute, but let's have a look at this a bit more clearly because you might not be able to read it there. So, by law, both parents of a child born in New Zealand must jointly notify births, deaths, and marriages as soon as reasonably practical after the birth, but generally within 2 months. So they're telling you must register your children. But now let's look at the difference between birth and born, because the whole idea of this presentation is that we need to know who we are. Birth is in the law dictionary. So if it's in the law dictionary, it means the law society has incorporated any words into the law dictionary, then they have sold rights to those words and they use them against us. And this is what the courts are for. They are only there to interpret words and to settle arguments. So birth is in the law dictionary. It's one of their invented words. So we need to be careful of any words that are in their law dictionaries. Birth, the act of being wholly brought into the world, the whole body must be detached from that of the mother in order to make the birth complete. But if a child be killed with design and maliciously after it has wholly come forth from the body of the mother, although still connected with her by means of the umbilical cord, it seems that such killing will be murder. Yeah, it's a bit strange. That may take a bit more looking at that, but there may be something in it. However, born is not in the law dictionary. Now, this one here, I've gone to the Oxford dictionaries. Go to any online dictionary. It's the easiest way to find the words. Born adjective existing as a result of birth. She was born in Aberdeen. I was born with a sense of security. Okay, so they're telling you born is different to birth, but it's a result of birth. And this is why when our parents fill out the registration form, they must fill out the date born and where born, and you'll find that on your printout. It will have your date born and your where born. So let's look at the different processes now. When your parents register the child as being born, the registrar issues a certificate. Now, we read that on their site just a little bit before. But on the bottom of the certificate is a warning not to be used as a means of identification. Yet on the website, they're telling you that you needed to get your driver's licenses, etc. Okay, but the bottom of the certificate tells us it's not to be used as identification. And this is what we're looking at, our born identity, are we not? The certificate is what they use to conduct commerce, and if we use it, we must suffer the consequences. You must take the good with the bad when you go into the public system or the birth system. Now, on the other side of the ledger, we are born. So to become free, we must use the form which shows that we were born, and that is your printout. We must obtain a copy of our printout Now, this is in New Zealand. In Australia and England, it is the extract. And in Canada, it's the certificate of live birth. Now, both these certificates, both the printout and the birth certificate, are on security paper. Now, there is the biggest clue that I can give you is that they are both on security paper, meaning they are registered securities with the Treasury. Bear that in mind. So whenever an agent for the corporation wishes to do business with us, the first thing they must do is gain our consent. Now, they do this by sending us letters or invitations to attend their courts or any of the other myriad of reasons that they get to get us into commerce. And if we don't know the rules, we end up paying. But on the private side, however, the Bourne side, this is the private side of ledger, and the corporation do not want us to know about this side. While we have evidence to prove that this side exists, accessing it is the hard part. But we're going to have a go. Once the agent for the corporation has our consent, either by ignorance, power of attorney, or dishonor, then they order a copy of our birth certificate. The birth certificate is printed on security paper, and the agent then fills out the back in the correct manner, puts the correct stamps on it, and floats it on to the money markets. And this is how their money is created. Every time they come to us to take us to court or any other thing, they will go and order a copy of our birth certificate. And if you do a Freedom of Information Act, you will find that this is the case. However, on the private side, to operate in this side of ledger, we must use our printout and fill out the back correctly, pay the stamp duty and send it to either the Treasury or the tax collectors. Now, each country has their own, in America it's the IRD, in Australia it's the Australian Tax Office, in America it's IRS, in New Zealand it's IRD, in Australia is the Australian Tax Office. Okay, but to operate on this side, you're going to have a sound knowledge of the Bills of Exchange Act and the Stamp Duties Act will be needed to operate successfully on that side. Now, I'm going to give you one example of an agent doing business with us. When we go to the bank for a loan, they only need two things from us, and that's a power of attorney, and they need to make us the customer. Now, to do that, they will get us to sign a loan agreement. And this is what I must now tell you. While everyone has been misled into believing that that original note or the loan agreement that we signed is the key to uncovering bank fraud, it most certainly isn't. Once the banks have our power of attorney and you are the customer, they order a copy of your birth certificate, and that's the instrument that we need to be asking for, because they fill out the instructions on the back of the birth certificate. And that is what goes on to the bond markets. Forget about asking for the original note. If you want to do something with the original note, cancel the power of attorney on that original note and make yourself the bank, not the customer. But if you want to find out where your loan document is, you will find it's the birth certificate that is out there trading on the markets. I can put money on that. Okay, so now we start to undo the mess. Every document, contract or privilege that was obtained using our birth certificate must now be rescinded or given back. The first document needs to be looked at is the birth certificate and how we can go about returning that, okay, because this is the warehouse keeper's receipt. Now, the bailee in possession is the person that holds this, our property. And so we need to return it to the bailee in possession. Okay, well, I've seen many different ways. The most simple way may be to surrender it. So let's look at what surrender means. It's, once again, it's conveyancing, estates conveyancing, a yielding up on, of an estate for life or years to him who has an immediate estate in reversion or remainder, by which the lesser estate is merged in the greater by mutual agreement. A surrender is of a nature directly opposite to release. So they're not releasing us, because a release operates by the greater estate descending upon the less. but the former is the falling of a less estate into a greater by deed. So we need a deed of surrender, and a surrender immediately divests the estate of the surrenderer and vests it in the surrenderee. That seems like the correct way to do it, as far as I can see. Now, this is just a bit more of from out of Bovier's on surrender. The technical and proper words of this conveyance are surrender and yield up. Those are the words you want to be using. So I will put a document on the next slide so that you can see the surrender and yield up. The surrender may be expressed or implied. The latter is when an estate incompatible with the existing estate is accepted, or the lessee takes a new lease of the same lands. So let's have a look. Here's the deed of surrender that I did up. And you'll see somewhere on there that I've... one of the important parts, I hope you can read this clearly out there, is with clean hands and equity. We can do it with clean hands and equity. They cannot. All right, so have a good read of that. Just pause the slide, or take a screenshot is probably the easiest way. If you don't know how to take a screenshot, go to Google and press and take screenshot, and you should be able to take a screenshot of that. Okay, once we have surrendered our birth certificate, the name which has been the cause of our grief will become obsolete, and we will now submit our printout so that we may operate under our identity, our born identity. Wonder what they were trying to tell us in this movie. Born identity. Now, here's a guy who didn't know who he was, wandering around lost. And I think what they're trying to tell us in this movie is, hey, go looking and see that you were born, not birthed. And maybe that's the message behind this movie. I'll leave that to you. But a few words of caution. The system that the corporation runs is extremely efficient and has many checks and balances. Now, do not venture anger at public servants. These are guys sitting on the counter who don't know anywhere near the amount of stuff that I'm putting out in these videos. So don't go venting your anger at them. Ask for help. And whenever you ask for help from them, ask them three times. So, you know, may I see your supervisor? May I see your supervisor? You know, always refer any private matters to the chief financial officer or chief executive officer in person. Okay? Do it personally and do it in the private. Always ask to speak to them in private. We need to correct the record to show that we are correctly identified, i.e. not a name. We need an identity. We need our born identity. We don't need a name. All right, so if we're going to be doing anything, this is what we need to put on all our documents. Now, you can buy those stamps already made, private and confidential, and I certainly have one of those and have used it for many years. I also have a seal so that I can sign on behalf of the corporation, which is my all capitals corporation. So you need to start investing in just a little bit to make sure that you've got everything right when you're doing this. But now the key to the whole matrix is to do the reverse to what we have been indoctrinated to do. And this is the whole key to it, is share your information with everyone and do not charge them for it. Get this information out. Give it away freely and help others, because we're on a spiritual mission here, not an argumentative mission. We're here to set the world free. All the best.
Okay, Moses, we're back now. We're going into something else. I'm going to have to move over for a minute before we put this thing in play inside the courthouse. We're going to look at something else, and this a backup system that we need to consider anytime things get going rough or stuff get tight. I want you to have access to this information so you'll know.
Every year, the federal government spends trillions of dollars. Budgets of states, counties, and cities also put out vast sums of money for goods and services. Official agencies are required to document their spending so that these expenses can be reviewed by the public. One of these statements used to fill this requirement is called the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, otherwise known as a CAFR report. Although designed to deliver information to the public, these reports are usually so large and confusing that they cannot be understood by most people. It takes years to learn how to properly interpret one of these massive statements. Walter Burian is an expert on CAFR reports. He's a former Navy veteran and has worked in trading commodity futures. Burian is our guest on the show today. He's here to talk to us about the CAFR reports and what they mean to ordinary Americans. We'll also discuss black budget spending as well as the causes behind greater levels of spending at the local and national level. Welcome to the program, Walter.
Good to be on your show, Gary. Just a little qualifier on what you were mentioning regarding CAFRs. Everyone listening to you and watching your show, we all have our budget for, say, operating our house. You know, we pay our water bill, our electric bill, our mortgage, specific items regarding our budget for our house. And, you know, if you're wealthy, you'll also have a statement of net worth. A statement of net worth is what's built up over your lifetime, maybe what you inherited, you know, from your family. You may be running several businesses. It consolidates all of your personal net worth and liabilities into one report, a statement of net worth. Well, a CAFR report is a statement of net worth for your local government. Your school district produces one, your city, your county, your state, federal government, the different agencies all produce one. And what was promoted for the last 65, 70 years to the population were the budget reports. So, you know, if you brought your neighbor over and you said, well, here's my...
Walter, is there a difference then between a budget report and a CAFR report?
Sure. A distinct difference. As I mentioned, a budget report is a projection for 1 year. And if you look at it on a personal level, you know, you could have your budget for your house, running your house, paying your insurance, paying your mortgage, the water bill, the electric bill. It's your budget for 1 year on your house. And then you have your statement of net worth, which will cover, since you were born, what you inherited, all of your operations, businesses, investment accounts, savings accounts, consolidated into one report, your statement of net worth. So there's a very, very big difference between a budget report and a statement of net worth, which is what the CAFR is, a statement of net worth. Again, on the personal level, you know, your budget for your operating your house may be $25,000 or $30,000 a year. You could audit your budget 100 times over. You're accounting for the $30,000 you allocated to operate your budget for your house. Well, if you look at your statement of net worth, let's say Gary, was left $5 million from his relatives and has been investing for 25 years and has a portfolio of $15 million, and you know, you're running five businesses on the side, generating another $1.5 million a year.
Anyone who has ever approached a government agency just to see what they do and how they do it can tell you they didn't get very far. Government seems to be at least as secret as any corporation, if not more so. This government secrecy goes back well before terrorism was a general concern. Our public agencies are not so public when it comes to disclosing their own conduct, their finances, their inside operations, and their productivity. Well, it turns out, just like many people and organizations that like to be secret, they do have something to hide. It's called the CAFR. The CAFR is the name for the financial accounts of any public agency. It stands for Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. And it is standard to all government agencies. Your courthouses have them, school districts have them, city, county, and state governments all have CAFRs. But up until recently, hardly anyone except government insiders have even heard of the CAFR. The hard numbers are in the CAFR. This is true reporting of all accounts, flows, and holdings. When media reports anything about public finance, this is what they should be talking about. But you may have noticed they only seem to talk about this thing called the budget. The budget is something very different. For government, the budget is not so much an accounting tool as a propaganda hallucination. A budget is a projection, a goal, a target. In accounting terms, the budget is referred to as inferior to the CAFR accounts. Suppose your county has a gazillion dollars in the CAFR, but they tell you they have no budget for dog catcher. Well, that's okay. That may be exactly right. They have a bunch of money, but they have budgeted nothing for dog catcher. This community has decided that stray dogs are not a problem, so fine. That has nothing to do with any shortage of funds. It's just a budget decision. They might tell you that they don't have the money for the dog catcher, but that would be just to appease the small minority who have lost their dogs. Now say they budget $1 million for mosquito abatement. Now they've decided to go into those CAFR accounts and set aside $1 million. The media tells us the county budgeted $1 million for mosquito abatement, but they don't tell us, they don't mention the gazillion dollars remaining in the CAFR accounts from which they are dispensing the $1 million. We sit here and believe that when they spend that million, there will be nothing left. They have us thinking that the budget is all there is. While we are duped into thinking government is broke, they are sitting on, in this case, nearly a gazillion dollars in many special off-budget accounts, and you don't see that unless you look at the CAFR. So now what happens if mosquito abatement goes over budget and costs $2 million? Well, since you and I don't know about the CAFR and that gazillion sitting in the accounts, the nightly news comes crying to us, telling us the county has gone over budget, run out of money, and they need to raise taxes or borrow to pay the extra $1 million for the mosquito abatement. Remember, your media does not audit the CAFR. They just say whatever government says. So here's a real-world example of CAFR magic. In 2007, the county of Los Angeles had an operating budget of $17.5 billion. In 2007 was the beginning of a protracted recession. Government was constantly complaining about budget shortfalls, austerity, belt tightening, robbing Peter to pay Paul, and the necessity to raise taxes and extend the public debt. You would expect LA County's budgets over the next few years to be flat or to go down. In the 5 years between 2007 and 2012, LA County raised its operating budget from $17.5 billion to $25.8 billion. They're projected to spend 47% more in 2012 than 2007. In the middle of a recession, where did that money come from? Yes, they borrowed. Yes, they raised taxes, but not that much. They moved money around in the CAFR, and presto, they came up with $8 billion more per year out of thin air. From a money skimming and laundering standpoint, the old organized crime families from the past would be green with envy at the size and scope of this operation. Compared to government, the private criminal class looks like a bunch of kids selling lemonade on the street corner. Of course, the government would arrest you if you did what they do, but, you know, they don't like the competition. So this business of borrowing and raising taxes makes no sense at all once we know about what those special funds are hiding in the CAFR. By not telling us about the CAFR, they can send the tax man to come and squeeze us for the extra million for the mosquito abatement. It's a big lie. They know it's a big lie, but it has worked 10,000 times in the past. If they can pretend to be broke, and we will believe them, then why shouldn't they go ahead and rob us? They're so good at it by now, they deliberately underfund almost everything to make the budget look tight. And the media never questions the real finances. And they regularly come to us with their handout for unexpected cost overruns. How many times have we heard that? By now, when we hear them say unexpected, we should say, well, I'm expecting it. Why aren't you? In the private sector, bad planning causes embarrassing disasters. In government, bad planning is a tactic for raising revenue. So a naive and idealistic taxpayer would expect that all the money in the CAFR would be budgeted for some government program. Well, that would be silly. Why should they do that? You and I have no idea what's in the CAFR. They can let that money sit there and languish, and we will never know the difference. Our media and our schools have dumbed us down on all things finance, and government likes it that way, by diverting our attention away to the petty and irrelevant issues. Our media, our schools, and our politicians create an intentional void and vacuum in the public mind. So we're thinking about anything except where the real money goes. If this sounds like I'm talking about a big plot to steal and misappropriate most of our public funds, I am. As soon as the revenues come in the door, your government finance bureaucratic whiz kids skim off large chunks into secret funds, and they keep that money off budget and hidden so they can invest it, compound it, reinvest it, and keep all those piles of cash in-house. Now, why would they want to do that? Of course, when a politician puts away big fat piles of money, he can use those millions or billions to back his buddies with investment capital. He can make his buddies rich, or make new buddies by making them rich. And you know how that works. If I make you rich, I think some kind of kickback would be in order. Another reason for our officials and bureaucrats to pack away money is to protect their job security. When government agencies start running out of money, they start firing people. So every bureaucrat, every official, every agency has a major incentive to pack away as much secret money as possible and keep it in a nice, handy, liquid account. And this has been going on for a very long time. Government's income from just investments is now twice as much as revenue from taxes. Many people find that hard to believe. Let me say that again. Government revenue from investments is twice as much as revenue from taxes. We could stop paying taxes tomorrow, and government would still have twice as much wealth and revenue than it needs to operate as it does today. And that secret stash grows bigger every day. Government is no longer a tax and spend operation. It is a tax and keep operation. Government revenues are constantly flowing into secret off-budget special funds, never to be seen again by the public. They are brilliant in coming up with names for these accounts that sound important and reasonable. There are rainy day funds, emergency funds, backup funds, set-aside funds, pension funds, discretionary funds. These are all just ways of saying, I am taking your money and I am not giving you anything in return. None of that money directly pays for any benefits, programs, or services for you and I. So we have to stop being fooled by this nonsense about this other thing called the budget. If you put aside a household budget of $400, you're going to spend $400 a month for your groceries, and then one month you need $450. Do you go and rob a gas station? No, you take $50 out of your bank account. Governments have bank accounts, and they have investment accounts, just like we do, but they keep that a secret. And to see that secret, you have to look in the CAFR. So when the media and our public officials start talking about having a budget crisis, really what we should just laugh and say, so what? Change the budget. Don't bother me. Show me the CAFR. Let's get an independent audit of that CAFR. If they're going to pretend they don't have any money, I guess we have to point it out to them. So we need to stop talking about the budgets and start looking very closely at the CAFRs. Media needs to break its silence to this. The political parties need to get this into their platforms. Politicians need to stop playing stupid and treating us like children. We need to audit those CAFRs, every single one of them, and we need to demand that those funds be used to eliminate the crippling taxes that are accomplishing little more than creating those secret accounts. So where do they park that money? Government owns majority stakes in companies like Microsoft, Time Warner, Disney, and Exxon. Government owns over 70% of all the primary blue-chip major U.S. corporations through investment in U.S. stock markets. You heard me right, 70% of the stocks of most of the big-name major corporations in domestic and foreign stock market exchanges. So what is good for GM may not be good for you, but it certainly is good for that for-profit investor called government. So as a small investor, how do you compete with one large single investor that has swallowed 70% of the investment market? The wealth that you and I should be making by investing in the stock market has been taken in taxes and is being made by government with your money, and the government is not sharing that wealth back with you. Government is not serving you, it is eating your lunch. Since government gets rich along with corporations now, it's no longer particularly interested in passing any real onerous regulations for public benefit. Government now passes laws and international trade policies that enrich corporations in which government is invested and from which it profits. In the interest of profits, government has created some very bad foreign policy, like invading and making war in places where our corporations covet the resources, or by permitting American corporations to hire dirt-cheap foreign labor, or by opening trade with countries that have next to no human rights and environmental protections. Make money here, pollute over there. Government is now the profiteer. It is the exploiter. Government uses all its power, force, and lawmaking authority to make corporations wealthy, because that makes government wealthy. So among the many crimes here, government blew open the doors on global trade, exploitation, and plunder. The side effect of that global plunder is the destruction of America's domestic wealth, prosperity, and sovereignty. By forcing American workers to compete with cheap Asian labor, this two-headed monster of corporations and government on a global rampage is bringing the American standard of living down to something like the Chinese bicycle-riding classes. Suddenly, a little protectionism doesn't sound too bad. Every dollar that sits in the backroom ledgers of the CAFR and goes into foreign investments is capital that in America creates no jobs, improves no standard of living, relieves no tax burdens, provides no government services or programs, and only serves to enrich and empower government insiders and financial elites. If the CAFR fraud is not fixed, America has no future. Here are some links where you can find out more. The most important thing is that we must move forward on independent audits of our local and state agencies, CAFRs, and we must return that money to the taxpayers or redirect the wealth to the public benefit. Send messages to your media and your representatives that you don't care about the budget and you want to see the real accounts. You want to know what is in the CAFR. More than 10 years ago, Walter Burian discovered the CAFR fraud and has worked to organize a national movement to perform audits and redirect all this public wealth back to the public benefit. Burian believes that by opening up the CAFRs, taxes could simply be retired altogether. Find out more at his website at CAFR1.com. Clint Richardson is also an expert in the CAFR issue and has posted useful information and videos. Find him at thecorporationnation.com and realityblogger.wordpress.com. Note that the blogger has one G. We need to get the word out on this, and we need to tell our public officials that the CAFR money is ours, not theirs.
G'day once again. Today we're going to dive a little bit deeper into the murky depths of the courtroom and what they're doing. Some of you out there still insist on going to court, so you're getting yourselves into all sorts of problems. So hopefully this will get you a bit further, you'll have a bit more understanding, and you'll be able to see what game they're playing, and you'll have a bit more confidence in dealing with the judges and the corrupt officials that run the place. So now let's now first look at the roles of the players there. The role of the judge first. Now, he can only hear argument. The judge is like a glove puppet where you have to stick your hand into the glove and wiggle it yourself. The judge can only hear argument. If he does not hear argument, he has nothing to arbitrate on. So he arbitrates between the parties who have an argument. That is his sole role. Well, supposedly. He will, as you'll see a little bit later, try and do things differently. But that is his sole role. He is the arbitrator between the two parties. Now, the role of the court. Let's have a look at the role of the court. Oh, dear. That's exactly what it is, folks. That's where all the money gets generated, at the bank. It is a bank, and he makes sure, the judge makes sure that everyone gets paid who comes into his court. Now, the role of the persecutor, oops, slip of the tongue there, prosecutor. The prosecutor takes a gamble that we do not know who we are and that we do not know our rights. And he does this in the hope of gaining a commission, because if we don't know our rights, he will get paid. So let's now look at how the process works, because you can see it's stacked against you right from the start. They're all in this little club together. So someone lays a complaint with the police, or you get pulled over for a traffic ticket or whatever, this is what's going to happen. An information is going to be written up and signed by the informant. Someone has to lay a complaint. Now, the information then gets served on us, asking us to answer the information. Answer will become a bit clearer later on. Some of these things will become a bit clearer later on. So it's up to us now. We can hire a lawyer or do nothing. And then we will get an invitation or summoned to appear in court. Okay. The information. An accusation exhibited, this is from Black's Law Dictionary, the 5th edition. And I have to thank the trained professional for providing me with a copy of this. The information is an accusation exhibited against a person for some criminal offence without an indictment. An accusation in the nature of an indictment, so it's not an indictment, but it looks like an indictment, from which it differs only in being presented by a competent public officer on his oath of office. So it's only on his word, instead of a grand jury on their oath. So what they've done is they've short-circuited the system here, and instead of putting it before a grand jury on their oath, they have a competent public officer do it. Now, it's a written accusation made by a public prosecutor without the intervention of a grand jury. It tells you there. In most states, the information may be used in the place of a grand jury indictment. There you go. Indictment, an accusation in writing found and presented by a grand jury. There you go. Convoked and sworn to the court in which it is impaneled, charging that person therein named has done some act or been guilty of some omission, which by law is a public offence, punishable on indictment. A formal written accusation originating with a prosecutor and issued by a grand jury against a party charged with a crime. An indictment is referred to as a true bill. Oh dear, I told you the court was a bank. It's a true bill. Whereas failure to indict is called a no bill. An indictment is merely a charge, there we go, everything's about money, which must be proved at trial beyond a reasonable doubt before defendant may be convicted. So there you go. It's all about money, folks. Okay. Let's look a bit further. Now let's look at an answer. So they've served an information on us, asking us to answer the information. And the answer is a pleading in equity, a defense in writing. Now be very careful, because this is what we use to avoid going to court. So if you get this part of it right, you won't need to go to court. Okay, a defense in writing made by a defendant. We'll talk about defendant later. To the charges contained in a bill or information filed by the plaintiff against him in a court of equity. The word in answer involves a double sense. Okay, so it's two things. It is one thing when it simply replies to a question, another when it meets a charge. The answer in equity includes both senses and may be divided into an examination and a defense. In that part, which consists of an examination, a direct and full answer or reply must in general be given to every question asked. Okay, so what they're telling you here is that when you respond to the answer, you must do it in two parts. So the first part, or the reply, must be given to every question asked. And the second part, in that part which consists of a defense, the defendant must state his case distinctly, but it was not required to give information respecting the proofs that are to maintain it. Okay, so the first part, you do answer to the charges. I'll cover this in another one a little bit deeper. Okay, in substance, the answer ought to contain, first, a statement of facts and not arguments. So you state the facts. Second, a confession and avoidance or traverse and denial of the material parts of the bill. Its language ought to be direct and without evasion. For an historical account of this instrument, see Barton's History on Treatise of a Suit in Equity. Okay, answer as a verb, the word denotes an assumption of liability as to answer for the debt or default of another. Okay, the first part is from Bouvier's. This last part here is from Black's fifth edition. Okay, so we're slowly going through all the different words here. Now let's get to lawyer. When we hire a lawyer, they then represent us. But what this really means is that they represent us as the corporation. Okay, so they don't present us as the true living man, they represent us as the corporation. Now let's look at how they trick us into believing that we are the person named on the charge sheet. Okay, so here's how it happens, you see. Everyone should have got a birth certificate, and it'll have this sort of information on it. It'll have, number one, it'll have John Henry, which were your given names. Number two, it'll have a surname, Doe. Then it'll have the sex, which is male, the date of birth, the place of birth, etc. Now, conversely, here in New Zealand, we have a printout. In America, you have your certificate of live birth. In Australia and England, you have your extract. But the printout is the proof of when we were born. Now, notice the difference, born and birth. Okay, so born on the 3rd of the 3rd, 2000. We're born, Auckland. Given names, John Henry, informant. Now, we've already seen what an information is, so whoever lays the information is an informant, so they're laying a charge. The informant is John Henry Doe Sr. The mother is Jane. Now, if you notice there, when you were born, you were only given two names. You were not given a surname. That is the living person. That is the dead one. Okay, so let's dive a little bit deeper into this. The printout is a copy of what is contained in the register. It shows when we were born, where we were born, and shows that the only names that were given, such as John Henry, this is the living, breathing man. Okay? This is proof that you were born and that you are living. The birth certificate, conversely, this is an estate which was created when your parents registered your born details. The estate also established a sedeque by trust in the name of the father. This is merely a warehouse keeper's receipt for the property that the bailee in possession holds on our behalf. They had to give us a receipt to tell us they're holding our property. Estate, the degree, quantity, nature, and extent of interest which a person has in real property. An estate in lands, tenements, and hereditaments signifies such interest as the tenant has therein. They're telling you we are only the tenant while they're holding our property. The conditional circumstances in which the owner stands with regard to his property is contained in a court case, Boyd versus Sibbold. Look that up yourselves. In this sense, estate is commonly used in conveyances. Okay, so when they conveyed the title to our property, that's what they're telling us there. The words right, title, and interest, and is in great degree synonymous with them all. Okay, so when you see a conveyance or property or estate, you know that rights, all our rights, title, and interest are held by them. Okay, the birth certificate is also a corporation. Once again, thanks to the trained professional, we've now got Black's Fifth Law Dictionary, and we have a look what a corporation is. It's an artificial person or a legal entity created by or under the authority of the laws of a state or nation, composed in some rare instances of a single person and his successors being the incumbents of a particular office, but ordinarily consisting of an association of numerous individuals. Okay, so what they're telling us there is that you can have a corporation with numerous other people, but it's also an artificial person, which is what they have done to us. We are an artificial person or a legal entity. And so a corporation can trade, and the corporation is the one that goes to court. Corpse. This is where corporation comes from. Corpse, the dead body of a human being. As a corpse is considered as nullius bonus, or the property of no one, oh dear, it follows that stealing it is not at common law under larceny. So they can steal what they like because we're dead, and they can only deal with dead. And corpus, once again, corpse, corpus, corporation, all from the same word, a Latin word which signifies body. As corpus delicti, the body of the offense, the essence of the crime, corpus juris canonis, the body of the canon law, corpus juris civilis, the body of the civil law. Okay, so you can see that these people can only deal with the dead, and as it's the property of no one, dead bodies belong to no one, it follows that stealing it is not an offense. What a wonderful system. Okay, corporations. Now, this one's from Bovier's Online Law Dictionary. Very easy to get that one, guys. Just go up online and type in Bovier's into Google and you'll get this. Name. Now, we're looking at the name. So we're also a name. We've received a name by getting our birth certificate, which is one or more words used to distinguish a particular individual. Okay, but the one that we're interested in here is number 5. Now, there's a whole heap. I've missed all those out because the one that we're really interested in here is number 5. In general, a corporation must contract and sue and be sued by its corporate name. Okay, yet a slight alteration in stating the name is unimportant if there is no possibility of mistaking the identity of the corporation suing. Now, what they're telling us there is that only corporations go to court. A corporation must contract and sue and be sued by its corporate name. And that's why, as a corporation, we get dragged into court if we don't know who we are or what we are. Okay, so the estate, the name, the corporation is also, oops, did I go backwards there? Sorry. The crown. I have revealed this before. But the estate, the name, and the corporation is also the crown. Now, this is where not many people have realized this up to date, but this is how the process works. Someone lays a complaint with the police. Information is written up and signed by the informant. In minor cases, the police prosecutor will present the case to the court. Criminal cases will be sold to a private law firm, normally called the Crown Prosecutors or the Crown Law Office or something similar. But for those of you that still insist on going to court, we need to know the roles of the parties in establishing our standing. So let's look a little bit deeper. As I said, the prosecutors, the police will sell this to the prosecutor. So the prosecutor will have to proceed summarily under the Summary Proceedings Act 1957. To proceed summarily, the prosecutor must come in under Section 49 of the District Courts Act. And this is what this says. Trustees, executors, and administrators. Any trustee, executor, or administrator may sue and be sued in a court in like manner as if he were a party in his own right, without joining any of the parties beneficially interested in the trust or estate. And you know that we are an estate and we're a trust, a sedicae vi trust. And shall be considered as representing such parties in the proceeding. There you go. He's representing the parties. The court may at any stage of the proceedings order any of such parties to be made parties to the proceeding, either in addition to or in lieu of the previously existing parties thereto. Now, we've also read earlier on that they may proceed on information alone. So the information does give them the right, but it's written there in the Act how they're doing it. So although you know that they can proceed under an information, you can see under the Summary Proceedings Act how they proceed summarily. Now, all the prosecutor needs to do is to trick us into believing that we are the corporation that was called and he has an adhesion contract by joinder. And this is what they're going to try and do to us. He will do this by telling the judge that he is there on behalf of the Crown. Now, we've already seen who the Crown is. The judge will then assume that we are the defendant. Once again, Black's Law, 5th edition, defendant. The person defending or denying, the party against whom relief is sought in an action or suit of the accused in a criminal case, okay? That's the party who they're trying to get relief from, the defendant. Not us, from the defendant, because if we know who we are, we certainly do not want to be the defendant. We want to be ourselves. And so defendere is to answer for, to be responsible for. We do not want to be responsible for that debt. No way. We want to be ourselves. So here's what normally happens is the judge gets handed a folder by the registrar and he calls the corporation's name. We mistakenly believe, well, all our lives we've been told that that is our name, so we believe that that name is us and jump up to acknowledge the judge. Judge now has an adhesion contract between the living and the dead because he called out a dead person and anyone can claim the dead person's property and it's not an offence. But if we do it this way, when the judge calls out the corporation's name, we jump up and say to the judge, I'm here about that matter. Things could change because now the judge will ask, are you Mr. Doe? Once again, they have to add Mr. because the Doe being all capitals. Now, here's a little trick that they use. If they use Mr., they do not have to capitalize it because that's a rank. If they call you, they must use Mr. because you cannot see the capitalization in their voice. All you can hear is the Doe, and you don't know whether it's all caps or upper and lowercase. So therefore, they add Mr., which is demeaning. Okay, we must now establish our court by asking the judge, Your Honor, before we go there, I must ask the prosecution a question. Now, he's not going to like this because he knows that if we're going to start asking the prosecutor doesn't know all the rules that the judge does. So do not ask for permission or wait for a response. Just go ahead and ask the prosecutor whatever you want to ask him. Now, the judge will try and deny you this, and you must object. Every time he tries to interfere, you must object. Just say, objection, Your Honor. I am asking the prosecutor a question, and go ahead and ask. And so this is, you can ask the prosecutor a number of questions. This is just one that I would ask. Mr. Prosecutor, are you here on behalf of the Crown? Now, we learned what the Crown is, so.
Okay, Morris. I think you got the gist one more time. And we are coming down to the close of the broadcast. And this concludes our three-part series. There is much, much more. But it's just a matter of giving you different angles to deal with this thing and defending yourself, but we're going to put this in another place so that you will be able to take your time and master. And keep in mind that when you go inside these administrative offices that they are calling courts and you talk to these administrative employees that they are calling judges, you'll be able to write this stuff down on paper and you can use your notes. So it's not a big thing. But anyway, I hope you all got something out of this series, And I'm going to have to close out tonight, but we're going to be supposed to be back tomorrow night, but I'll see. I haven't gotten a call from my guest, but hopefully we'll be back tomorrow night, so I'll be posting now. But anyway, I've been your host, Akamane Albe, and you all have a good evening. Okay?